What?
Hold on.
Holding.
Things. Things going. Things.
Okay.
Hey.
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 So.
I have a cold.
You have a cold?
Yeah, so I probably won't be sticking out too long here.
Well, then I should go ahead and do this then.
Nice.
Do you have a cold beer?
Do you have a cold because you've moved or?
No. I have a cold because my wife got on an airplane and picked up some terrible contagion and brought it home and infected me.
Your wife is oh God, oh I failed.
What?
What the hell is her name?
What just happened?
Jen Paltrow?
Emma. God, thank you.
Sure. I'm glad I can remember it. It's important. But I remember your wife's name, Sonia. But anyway.
No, Gwyneth Paltrow was the
Oh. From Contagion. Yeah.
Most people don't know that Serv is married to Gwyneth Paltrow.
She's a crazy bitch.
So, Serv, what's Coldplay like?
Shitty.
That's
mostly.
A very personal question, JJ. I'm afraid.
So, JJ, I'm moving to Portland.
Congrats.
Thanks.
When are you coming?
So, is that official?
She accepted the job today.
How's that?
Oh, fantastic.
What are you going to do now, though?
Hopefully the same thing, but that hasn't all been ironed out yet.
Live off of her wages?
It's my turn.
Your turn. Well, you'd fit right into Portland, then.
Yeah, exactly.
Are you going to be moving into Portland proper? Or?
Probably the western area, like Beaverton or Tualatin.
Don't go to Tualatin. It's Tualatin, but don't go to Beaverton. Don't.
Well,
because then JJ can never come talk to you, ever.
Because I'll be a sellout piece of shit.
No, you'd be surrounded by horrible... It's where we keep the white trash.
Oh. Well.
Okay, so that's where you belong, Jason.
Wow.
Yes. Sorry.
Well, we want to be close to the Nike campus, so...
Oh, well, yeah, and that would be. But you can, you know, I live in the Northwest Quadrant, and that's, you know, that's close to Beaverton. I could get there via train in maybe half hour.
And bicycle? How long would it take you via bicycle?
I've never biked out to Beaverton.
And you call yourself an Oregonian.
No, because what happens is, since it's that area of town, he'd come out and find his bike up on blocks.
Honestly, the problem is to get to Beaverton from here, you have to go over either a huge hill or a small mountain, depending on what you want to call it. And I like my bike, but I am a large man, and that's a lot of bike.
Hey, we live in Florida, so everything is a mountain.
Yeah, John, I have a question. What is he talking about? What are these things called, hills or mountains?
Isn't that like between the tip of your penis and never mind?
Whoa.
there's something when you come out of Beaverton off of the Sunset Highway, which is 26. You'll know what I'm talking about soon enough, Serv.
Yeah.
But you come out by the zoo, and there is it's an 8% grade straight down, and they call that the zoo bomb. And once a year, a bunch of idiots go there in the middle of the night and ride their bikes as fast as they can down the zoo bomb. And every year people get messed up. You know, you can't stop for traffic. It's not a legal event. So it's not like the naked bike ride where you know, cops cordon off the route. It's just something that a bunch of idiots get together and do and hurt themselves.
The naked bike ride. Doesn't that just kind of sound like rock should be involved?
Who do you think founded it?
That's true.
She doesn't like that. She doesn't like that information to really get out.
Right. I'll edit that part out.
Okay, good.
All right.
So I was instructed by Lee not to discuss Ender's Game or Thor the Dark World. So I would like to propose that we start talking about Thor the Dark World first and then Ender's Game.
Wait, is she joining us later or?
Yes, apparently.
Oh, okay.
I've read lots of Thor comics and I've read Ender's Game. I've seen neither film.
Have you seen the original Thor?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it came out on Friday. I work weekends. I'm actually hoping to go see it this Thursday.
Nerd. He made the funny.
See, what I find interesting, though, is it, now, sir, have you seen it?
Nope.
Okay. But, John, you've seen it.
Yes, sir.
So of all,
but something tells me I'm not going to get a whole lot spoiled.
Well, I just find it amusing that JJ, of all of us, you are the most Viking-like, I must say, and you have not seen the film yet.
I very much want to. I just, you know, when you have to work on Saturday and Sunday, it's hard to sneak away for a long lunch break.
I understand. Well, skip the 3D. That's all I can tell you.
The last Marvel film I saw in 3D was Thor, and I was so disappointed and angry.
Well, oddly, they showed in front of the one reason to go see Thor 3D was they showed the Captain America sneak preview. And I finally got to see the elevator scene. And you know what? It was fucking badass.
Nice.
It's great. I can't wait to see that. But my point was, Captain America in 3D for me was really good. It was like the best of all the Marvel 3D stuff. I mean, even better than Avengers, which was still good. But the sneak preview was in 3D as well for Captain America Winter Soldier, and it looked fantastic. So I don't know why that is, but it just looked really good. I'm really looking forward to that one. And I really enjoyed Thor too.
Thor 2 or T-O-O?
Yes.
The numeral 2.
Okay.
Yeah, Dark World.
Well, see, here's the problem. I'm really just sick and tired of 3D. It's a fucking money grab. It doesn't...
Unless you see something like Gravity.
Okay, I haven't seen that. Or the only 3D movie that I was happy that I saw it in 3D was Navi, the big tall grouper.
Oh, Avatar.
Well,
yeah, that one.
And the only
that
reason
was
why
brilliant
that
in 3D.
Yeah, and the only reason why that movie worked was because of the 3D. Outside of that,
right? It was beautiful. It was stupid, and it was Pocahontas, but it was beautiful.
Well, let's see. I would say Pacific Rim was also good in 3D, and the reason for that is Del Toro brought in Cameron and said, "Consult for me."
But see, I feel like it's just become a money grab.
Well,
and
no,
I'm,
what do you mean become?
I'm tired of it.
No, sir, what do you mean become? Basically, China consumes more 3D movies. I mean, Scott's mentioned this before. They consume 3D movies like it's going out of style. And considering that everyone is making their money off of the international market, they're not going away. I am honestly surprised that when I went to go look up times for Ender's Game, I'm amazed that was not in 3D. I actually think it probably would have been improved in 3D, actually.
It wasn't
if done properly.
It wasn't in 3D?
No.
I could have sworn I had to find a time that was in 3D. I mean, wasn't in 3D.
They didn't show it here in 3D.
I thought it was 3D IMAX, too. Whatever IMAX means.
Yeah, my friend Jason saw it in 2D, but wanted to go back and see it in 3D.
I'm looking. Hang on.
Our friend Jason?
Yes.
Okay.
From Mars Needs Podcast, Jason?
Yes, from Mars Needs Podcast. We discuss Ender's Game on this next episode.
Of Mars Needs Podcast? Where can that
of
be
Mars
found?
Mars Needs Podcast on the website of Doom.
The
so wait,
website of
let
Doom?
Let me understand this. Mars Needs Podcast.
Yes.
It's that Jason.
That Jason. That Jason would, if you would.
Now, let me ask you. I know that Mars needs podcasts, but does Mars need John Carter?
Apparently not. I think I would say they needed him to a point, but they didn't need Gambit to play. Was it Gambit who played him?
Yeah, I think it was. You're right.
Yeah.
I didn't even draw that conclusion. Fault. That line.
It's not his fault.
Poor kid. I have nothing but sympathy for a guy who gets to play these roles that just sound so awesome, and the movies are so bad.
Hey, JJ, when last I saw you, you and buddy Jason were packing up to get on the road.
Wasn't
to
Han?
Go to an Han? Iron Maiden concert.
Yes.
How was that?
It was a lot. Well, Nashville in general was a lot of fun. But
the ABC television show?
Wait, what?
I said the ABC television show Nashville? You really like that?
I've never seen the ABC show Nashville.
Don't bother.
Or Nash Bridges.
However, next week, WWE Raw is coming live from Nashville, so I will probably watch that show in Nashville. But no, the Iron Maiden show was a lot of fun. I hadn't seen anything that had spectacle like that in a long time. It tends to around here, arena shows tend to be so expensive that I think I've only been to maybe two arena shows since I've lived in Portland. You go to a lot of club shows,
right?
And so, like, when I saw Cher in an arena show, that was a lot of fun because she, you know, she had lots of dancers and huge sets and stuff. So it was nice to go to a show that had explosions and fog and lights and people in giant costumes and set pieces that came in for one song and then disappeared.
So how would you describe the general age of the audience for an Iron Maiden show?
It actually skewed pretty broadly. I mean, I know that that's kind of, you know, they always say our audience goes everywhere, but I was kind of expecting to see a bunch of people in the, say, 30 to 40 range.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too. I was thinking you're going to have a crowd, you're going to have an arena full of 30-year-old dudes to 45-year-old dudes who loved Iron Maiden who when they were at their pinnacle.
Yeah.
And then some of their kids.
But there were a lot of, you know, there were a lot of like 18-year-olds and a lot, I mean, there were little kids too, but I, you know, there were little kids that had spiky hair and stuff. It was kind of fun.
Huh. I think that's great. I'm a little bit surprised, but I think that's great.
I was pleasantly surprised because it meant that the audience, was really into it.
Yeah, the people that wanted to be there were there.
Yeah, because again, one thing that I dislike about living in a town that's a little bit blasé about things is Portland is the sitting downest town for music ever. If you give Portlanders a chance to sit at a concert, it doesn't matter who it is. When I saw Tower of Power, people sat through Tower of Power. And that just, I don't understand how you can sit during a horn section of that magnitude. But I've seen, you know, I've seen hard rock shows that people sit through and it just, I don't get it. So it was nice to be in a general admission, sort of massive, sweaty, crazy, just a release of energy like that again. It was a blast.
Very nice. Well, good. I'm glad. I'm glad that because I was very when you guys said that you were taking the road trip and doing an Iron Maiden show, I was like, wow, Iron Maiden. I remember Iron Maiden at, you know, like I said, at their pinnacle, and I was just like, it's been a long time since those days, yeah. And I just really want to know what that audience looks like.
And more importantly, the band was amazingly energetic.
That is a little bit surprising because all those dudes are probably, you know, at least mid to late 50s, right?
At least. But like Bruce Dickinson, he was routinely jumping off the platform that was behind the drums. And when he'd land, the platform was over his head. So that means he was routinely making a 6-foot jump. 6-foot
jumps, yeah.
And running to the front of the stage and leaping over monitors and stuff without even, you know, breaking a note at any given time. I mean, they were putting the energy in it like there were a bunch of like you expect to see a bunch of, you know, 19-year-olds promoting their first album.
Man, that dude should run to the hills.
I think he should. Wait a minute. They gave us the show.
Oh. What?
Nothing. I was just saying, with you mysteriously gone, not that, you know, necessarily that everybody needs to know that, it just sort of became JJ and Serv talk about Iron Maiden for a while.
That'll be how it's written up in the liner notes of Weekend Justice.
So this would be the self-referential moment.
So you anything while, else while going
I type
on?
All this out.
So
hey, we're just following the script, okay?
So they announced Iron Man Iron Fist and Power Man.
Oh, that's right. Yes, the Marvel television shows.
Yes.
Well, at least we don't have another Daredevil movie to worry about.
Hate Daredevil.
Neither did I.
Neither did I.
Really? Wow.
I hated Elektra.
Elektra was terrible. That's why. Yes.
Right. But I didn't hate Daredevil.
No.
Wow. That's amazing.
I didn't necessarily
still
hate
love me, Widge.
Yes, I do. He's
confused by you.
See, hang on. Here's the thing that most people don't understand. I want to like movies. I want to like all movies because otherwise I'm sitting there for an hour and 40 minutes wasting my time. So I would much rather enjoy every fucking movie I go see. Granted, it's much more fun to do a review driving home, ranting my ass off. But for the movie experience itself, I wish they were all awesome. And my problem is the core problem for me about Daredevil was two things. First of all, the Kingpin casting I thought was great.
Did something with him.
Part of the problem was that he just recently passed away and I've completely forgotten
his name.
Michael Clark Duncan, thank you.
Gwyneth Paltrow.
I feel so bad because
Paltrow as Kingpin? Awesome. Oh,
that would be great. What a reveal for Iron Man 4. I'm great. He's Kingpin. But the problem was they introduced him playing Nerd's Lap Dance. And that is a pimp song. And Kingpin is not a pimp. He's the Kingpin. He is the ultimate crime boss.
He's pimping, but he's not a pimp.
Exactly. And I'm like, why are you going to go for colorblind casting and then like go for like the stereotypical, oh, well, he's a crime lord, therefore he must be a pimp. It's like, come on, really? That was problem number one. Problem number two is Matt Murdock walks around with the same goddamn cane that he uses as Daredevil. It's got a devil's head on it. Seriously? Now, I understand he's blind, but for fuck's sake, someone should have pointed that out to him.
Maybe everybody else is blind too.
You know what? That was the movie called Blindness, and it was much more depressing.
And with regard to problem number one, at least they didn't put Kingpin in platform shoes with fish in them.
Is that a reference, or is that just a fashion statement that you...
Well, it is a reference to
I'm going
to
get you sucker.
I'm going
to
get you sucker, yeah.
Oh, okay.
But, John, you missed the opportunity to play crickets.
Well, it wasn't in the stage directions, let's put it that way.
Well, he also missed the opportunity to play cricket, but then again, we don't have 5 days to spare.
And one knows how to play that fucking game.
honestly, I learned enough of it from my project manager at work so that I could watch a really great cricket movie. I know that sounds insane, but there was a really fantastic Bollywood cricket movie called Lagan.
Oh, I thought it was called Pinocchio.
No, they don't play cricket there. In Pinocchio, they play it being a real boy, and he fooled everyone.
Wicked googly.
What? So what was it? It was Iron Fist. It's Luke Cage. It's Daredevil. And what's the fourth one?
Jessica Jones.
Yeah. Okay. See, I would. Oh God, if they did a Jessica Jones show, right? Like the Alias comic book, that would be fantastic. I enjoyed the shit out of that book.
Well, I want to say one thing real quick, and then I will let this go on. But I was going to say for those of us who remember seeing Daredevil as Rex Smith in a black uniform and the Kingpin as an overacting John Rhys Davies, the film was just fine.
Perspective, use it or lose it.
So, but I'm excited about this new Netflix thing, just because, I mean, for one thing, I years ago wrote a, for the website of Doom, I did this thing where I looked at a bunch of old, superhero shows, you know, good ones and bad ones, like the old Saturday morning Shazam show and the aforementioned, Incredible Hulk that had Rex Smith as Daredevil, as a ninja, and just some of those things, and rated them from good to bad. And I realized after I'd kind of shit on them, I realized that I should promote what I thought would be a very good series. And the series that I decided that if I were Marvel that I would work on was The Pulse, because I didn't figure you didn't want to call it Alias, because Alias was already a show at that time.
Right.
But The Pulse was the second Jessica Jones series, and I thought if you could bring in if you could retain I can't remember his name, so I'll say Gwyneth Paltrow as J. Jonah Jameson.
Oh yeah, that was Gwyneth Paltrow.
Yeah, I thought so.
Yeah, and, otherwise known as Mrs. Service.
Yeah. But you know, and had it go, instead of being a police procedural, being like a investigative journalism, and you could still introduce these ground level characters like, say, Cloak and Dagger, which are interesting but don't need their own series,
right?
So yeah, if you do it right, there's just a huge amount of material that you can draw from just these four characters.
And at Netflix, I mean, I enjoyed the hell out of House of Cards. So, I mean, I think they'll do it properly.
Well, is it...
Or they could.
Is it a Netflix production, or is it just... because I know that Disney signed basically exclusive agreement with Netflix to do all of their... They ditch Stars, and yeah, they're going right to Netflix. I mean, in fact, Netflix gets most of their Disney's kid programming, like, immediately after the season ends.
Right.
In fact, actually, I think Ultimate Spider-Man is currently, I think it's like only a few weeks after the new one airs, it shows up on Netflix. So I don't even think it's necessarily that it's a Netflix production as much as it's just, you know, Disney's Marvel studio, and that's the way they choose to push it out there.
Well, the deal they signed, they're actually treating Netflix like a television channel. So I believe that means that their movies from now on, if I understood the way I read the story when it first came out, that things that Disney produces aren't even going to go to cable. They're going directly to Netflix.
Right, yeah. That's when they ditched Stars. I mean, Stars was the last – I mean, technically the agreement kind of phases out through this following year. So but yeah, all their stuff goes right to Netflix, which is interesting because I can't imagine. I mean, maybe they do make a lot of money, but it doesn't seem like. I'm trying to figure out how Netflix makes money, because at some point, the amount of things you have to pay royalties on has got to outstrip the number of people that you have that subscribe to your service.
They make money off the people that still get the DVDs and they leave them in their kitchen for weeks and never watch them.
So the virtual version of Blockbuster, basically.
Yeah.
Or, never mind. I had something else, but I forgot.
Yeah, I'm looking over the article. I'm not seeing who. I mean, I see the deal, and I see that they're going to eventually. I mean, you could see them doing Power Man and Iron Fist. They're talking about doing the Defenders at some point. But I don't honestly see anything saying who's producing it. I would, as far as actually producing the content, I would assume it's an agreement between the two of them, because.
I mean, it can be a Netflix original series, but not.
Right.
Because Netflix has their own studio now.
Yeah.
That's where they produced Orange is the New Black and House of Cards and and what's it, Arrested Development, and also Lilyhammer, which is actually a very good series too. Very understated. The but yeah, it's I would think though that Disney and Marvel, you know, well, Disney basically,
or Darvel, as I like to call them,
they wouldn't give up that much creative control to Netflix.
No, probably not.
Although I will say this, pretty much their kids cartoons now, I'll call them kids cartoons, but the XD stuff is being all done by the Ben 10 folks, Man of Action Studios.
Well, they probably have sign off on it. I mean,
yeah, probably. But
ultimately, they've got to have sign off.
I mean, you still see Joe Quesada and those folks listed as producers and
right,
whatever.
The Marvel Illuminati, basically.
But definitely the feel of it is a Man of Action series.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, if you're Disney, you look at what's popped in the last couple of years, and the only cartoon series that's really made a lot of headway with kids is Ben 10.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you go, sure, make Ben 10 only with the Hulk.
It's interesting because if you watch the progression of Ben 10, because I have a 8-year-old, 9-year-old, 9-year-old son. I had to think about it. The progression of Ben 10, as you could see, they started to kind of get their creative, you know, people started to trust them. Because, I mean, I think that was their first thing they ever did. As they started to get their feet underneath them, it actually kind of took off and actually got a lot better progressively. And actually, they took it to some interesting design choices and artistic choices as far as the artwork of Ben 10. It's changed immensely since its inception.
Well, can I just say, I was really... I remember when Variety used to have decent content. God help them. But they're constantly making... They're giving opinion when they don't know what the fuck they're talking about. I found it hilarious that I it was in Variety. They were talking about, oh, Marvel's trotting out the second-tier heroes. And I'm like, oh, when was the last time it came? Oh, they're trotting out a second-tier hero? Oh, that was Iron Man. Oh, right. That's right. What's kicked off the entire fucking franchise and has made them... you know, gajillions of dollars. Oh, yeah, that second-tier hero. Fuck you, Variety. You don't know what the fuck you're talking about.
Well, that's what... actually, I just heard an interview with Kevin Feige. He was on an episode of The Nerdist.
Yeah.
And that's what the LA Times apparently put out, was that they were... when they first did Iron Man. Because Iron Man was considered a risk, and Hulk was considered a safe bet.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, as I mentioned at the time, the problem was is that for most people... they didn't know Iron Man. They're like, they're making a movie out of the song? I mean, because... I mean, we all know Iron Man because we're us. But, I mean, the problem is, as we learned, or as Joss Whedon learned to his detriment, you know, if your fan base was... as I used to say, if your fan base was enough to carry a film, then at this point we would have, like, Serenity 3 in theaters, you know?
Yeah.
You have to appeal broader than that, which is what they managed to do with Iron Man and have managed to do ever since, which is why, I mean, what was crazy was Halloween, going down to Publix to get something and seeing all the kids doing their trick-or-treating at Publix and seeing the amount of superhero kids was just unbelievable. And can I just say, these kids like wearing Captain America where they got all the muscles, which always looks wrong on a 5-year-old. Sorry. But you got the muscle costumes. You know what I'm talking about? They're actually padded out and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You guys know what I'm talking about. Back in the day, your Captain America costume would have been a plastic thin version of Captain America with the eye holes cut out, which severed your eyelids if you wore them wrong. And then a horrible plastic garbage bag feeling like thing, which didn't have like the Captain America insignia on it. It had the logo and maybe a picture of Captain America throwing his shield. And because they realized we're not, there's no fucking way we're going to be able to do the costume justice. So you're not Captain America. You are the embodiment of Captain America, the comic.
And it would have been on like it was one of those things that you have to wear in the hospital.
Yes.
Like the robe that goes on backwards or whatever. Yes.
You kids don't know how lucky you have it.
And the art wouldn't have been current either. It would have been some old joke or some Kirby like clip art.
Oh, yeah.
Golden Age.
Yeah. So that and just fucking kills me.
And your tongue would get cut on a little slit.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, but the thing was, you couldn't stop licking it. No matter how much it hurt. Or is it just
John, the problem was you were supposed to take the mask off before you ate any candy.
Oh.
Andrew, I was supposed to make out French style with the mask.
That's what I was doing.
Well, not to mention, though, even if you didn't do that, you would put it on, you would automatically cut your lip. Then you'd go to lick your lip to see if you were bleeding. And then you would accidentally cut your tongue. And then you'd keep checking the front to see if a piece of your tongue was hanging off the damn thing.
And then next thing you know, you're lying on the sidewalk from loss of blood.
And then the next year you say, screw it, I'm going as a hobo.
Yep.
And then some lady on a bicycle that looks like steampunk shows up and she's like, what you doing? You got any apple pie? And you're like, oh, man.
Not again.
I did have a pair of inflatable muscles when I was very, very young. When The Incredible Hulk was on television, one of my costumes as a young child was inflatable. It was like it went on over your shoulders and strapped behind your pecs, I guess. And so it was like inflatable pectoral muscles, shoulders, and biceps.
God, that would be horrible. Can you imagine trying to play the Hulk with that costume? You're like, well, that's my secret. I'm always angry.
And I'm always out of breath.
Oh, I got to punch this thing now.
Now, what
about asthmatic Hulk?
That inhaler's huge.
Hulk, inhale. Isaiah
Hulk
Moose
winded.
Hulk winded is a term that we used to use for a giant fart having happened. Oh my God, we got Hulk winded.
So I
thought Hulk Wind was the band that Lemmy was in before Motorhead.
Wow. So, John, yes, you were saying.
I was going to say Isaiah Mustafa as Power Man. Everyone remembers him, right?
Oh, yeah. He's hilarious. When they did that, like, real-time Old Spice Twitter interaction thing, it was brilliant. My problem with Old Spice was they used to have this great antiperspirant that didn't stain black T-shirts, which is, of course, all I wear. And they stopped making it. So I was like, your cute commercials are not going to save my T-shirts. I'm switching to Speed Stick. Sorry. But
I'm curious. And curious as well.
You're curious? What?
Why did they kill that particular
I have
series?
No was idea.
Did he ask for too much money? Is that what the problem became?
No. Well, eventually you just trade out spokespeople, because I mean, if you've done it and done it, and he may have wanted to transition into actual acting, getting ready for the call to play Luke Cage. There was one of those videos where he actually did make mention of.
Oh yeah,
yeah. So I don't know. I think if they, if he was able to pull like a Hemsworth sort of physique, because that's the thing. I mean, Cage is not small. He's not wiry built. You know what I mean? Wiry strong. He's like strong. He looks strong to begin with. And then you make him indestructible and it's like, holy shit.
The two names that everybody is throwing around is Isaiah Mustafa and Terry Crews.
Now, the deal is that Terry Crews, don't screw with Terry Crews, please. Terry Crews right now is fucking hilarious on Brooklyn 99, I think. Gwyneth Paltrow.
Yes.
And Adrian Brunner. Brenner?
Oh, yeah.
Paltrow.
Sandberg. Sandberg is the other one I was thinking of.
Andy Sandberg.
Yes. That's your, and he is hilarious on that show.
Or as we call him, Andy Paltrow.
He did a small thing in on Drunk History. Just a cameo, which was quite funny. You guys have seen that, right?
I've seen an episode of it.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Okay. I find it amusing anyway.
Especially when I'm drunk.
Yeah, well there you go. I don't know. I mean, here's part of the problem. Terry Crews, when I see him, I go, oh, it's Terry Crews. It's like in The Expendables, oh, it's Terry Crews. You know what I mean? It's like, I'm sure if I watched that show, it would be like, oh, look, it's Terry Crews.
Yeah.
It would be like, oh, it's Terry Crews as Luke Cage.
The beauty of it, though, is that on Brooklyn Nine-Nine, he actually plays basically the opposite of what Terry Crews, of who Terry Crews is. He's more of a, I mean, he's into, you know, weightlifting and all this other stuff. And, you know, that whole bit's funny, but he also plays this guy who's, you know, he wants to sit at a desk because he's scared of being outside. And it works really well. I mean, he is really funny. I mean, actually that show is actually, and Rox hit it on the head when she said that it's essentially Barney Miller. And,
I mean, okay.
Yeah, you should really check it. Rarely does it go outside of the actual, you know, cop room, if you will, the office.
Yeah.
But when it does, it's, you know, just these little cameos. It's mostly their interaction and their dysfunctionalness inside of the.
Well, now here's the other thing too, something to bear in mind. I'm not dissing Terry Crews. I'm saying from the standpoint of what they've done that's interesting with Marvel is you could see them, you know, having the Luke Cage show and the Iron Fist show and then doing that thing for like two seasons and then canceling both shows and combining them into Power Man and Iron Fist or mm-hmm. Heroes for Hire. They could do that. And it would make a lot of sense to do that. But they've also established that you're going to have interchangeable parts between television and the movies.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we've already seen Jackson crossover. We've seen Kobe Smulders crossover.
She's already on television, but anyway.
Coulson. No, but you know what I'm saying. From the movies. She's playing the same character. So I'm trying to think of characters who you could, especially for a name character like Luke Cage, that could transfer up to the Avengers if you wanted to.
Yeah.
And from that standpoint, I mean, I don't know. Does Terry Crews fit with that group?
Well, what I was telling a friend of mine today, because we were having this very discussion, because of the kind of people we are, because part of it, what came out today is the news that Drew Goddard is the front runner to write for Daredevil, which is incredibly exciting because Daredevil written on the same level as Cabin in the Woods is incredibly exciting.
Okay.
But Marvel has done such a fantastic job of casting out of left field. I mean, Chris Hemsworth, really? And so I kind of want a Power Man that I've never heard of before. I want somebody that I'm just going to look at and go, oh, Power Man.
It's possible. No, they could go with a complete unknown. But yeah, no, their casting's been very good. And they don't. Now, I will say this. Their casting's been very good for the movies. I have not been entirely pleased with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I have not seen this week's episode yet, but last week's episode was an improvement.
Which one, when you say last week, which one are you referring to?
Not yesterday. We're recording this on a Tuesday. Not yesterday.
Well, it's going on right now. That's why I'm asking.
Oh, sorry. I'm confused. Blacklist is Monday. S.H.I.E.L.D. is Tuesday. So, no, I'm caught up then. I am caught up.
You saw the one with the, well, just say the lightning.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, I did.
I thought that was their strongest episode thus far.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I mean, although I am, now is everyone caught up and or watching and or cares?
I'm not
caught up.
I'm caught up.
I'm not caught up, but I also I don't plan on getting caught up anytime soon. Not that okay. I don't care. I'm just right. behind.
I understand. I think because I actually thought of, well, what could improve the show? And my thought, I had three thoughts. I was like, one, Coulson actually knows what's changed about him and everyone's tiptoeing around him and needlessly, but they've sort of ruled that out. I just thought that would be an interesting twist. Number two, kill somebody. I'm like, Joss Whedon apparently is notorious for killing people. I'm like, prove it. Kill one of these people. Because I don't really care about any of them except for Agent May. And if he killed her, I'd riot. But I'm like, kill one of the... I was thinking, kill one of the scientists, actually. So that the other one actually, you know, acts like they're in a spy organization instead of on a field trip. That would be great. And I thought, oh, wow, are they going to do one this? Are they going to do it in this episode? They're not. And the third idea, which I think would be really interesting, is there's this whole thing in the Captain America trailer of how S.H.I.E.L.D. is going a bit wonky, shall we say. I think it would be fascinating if, I mean, we've seen it done a lot of times in, oh, well, we've got to go rogue and we've got to, I mean, Mission Impossible's done it twice. The G.I. Joe movie did it. We've seen it done a lot in the movies. Have we actually seen, I mean, A-Team doesn't count. Have we actually seen a group that was established then break off from the mothership, so to speak, and have to go underground?
It feels very S.H.I.E.L.D. comic.
Which I never read, so... But you know what I'm saying? It's basically like, first of all, am I the only one concerned about how much fuel they're using with that fucking huge plane?
And how are they refueling?
Every time I see it, it's in flight, and I'm going, my God.
You know what, Widge? Mm. Tesseract. Okay, we're done.
Oh, that thing that's no longer on the planet? I got you.
Yeah, Thor. Thor occasionally loans some to him.
Oh, yeah.
Nuclear.
Maybe Stark gave him an arc reactor.
It's possible. Granted. But you know what I'm saying. It's just that... one of the things I like about the show...
Widge, they have a flying car.
What's that?
They have a flying car.
Yeah, and how much fuel does that use? Not much,
because he never takes it out. He only took it out for the first episode, and that was it.
Because that costs money. That's effects, John. That's effects. There's the environment, and then there's effects.
It just sits there next to the SUV, and that's it.
Are we talking about Lola?
Yes, that is my favorite Cake song. Lola.
So,
hi, Lee.
So
Lola is a midlife crisis.
I've got to call out. What Serv put into the window there, and I.
What?
I could see him as Power Man.
I could see him as Power Man.
Lester Spigot? Spit? Spite?
Spite?
Who are you talking about?
Holy crap.
Huh?
That is a big dude.
Yeah.
There's a great picture.
What are they talking about?
There's a great picture. Here, I can see if I can show it to you. There's a picture with him next to Terry Crews. Terry Crews looks like me next to Terry Crews.
Like Iron Fist.
Yeah, he looks like
Does
Iron Fist.
Does it look like me next to you?
Essentially.
That's tiny.
And can I say, I would never have guessed that he was 50.
Who, Terry Crews or?
No, Lester, the guy, Lester, whatever his name is.
Spite.
He's
Lester
50.
Who are we talking about?
We're talking Lester... about, we're doing Power Man auditions.
Okay, whatever. Can we talk about Ender's Game now? Because I got to go bed soon.
We're talking about Power Man auditions and who... Tim Burton cast as Power Man?
Yeah. What about Biggie Langston?
What
about Biggie Langston?
Biggie Langston, who's he?
I'm finding a picture of him right now. He's a power lifter, a world record holder who is now a wrestler. Kind of like Mark Henry was.
Can he act?
But,
is he The Rock?
The Rock's too Hawaiian.
Yeah.
To be Power Man, certainly. Yeah. But not to be Iron Fist.
I don't know.
My thing is, it's like, well, if you're going with a, I'll say this, if you go with a 50-year-old Power Man, then Okay, yeah. Then you can go with a 39-year-old Iron Fist, Ray Park.
Well, yeah.
Ooh. Oh, Ray Park would be.
Kind of deserves it.
And you know what?
Which one is the one you're talking about with Lester? Is the one in the middle, right? Or no. The one on the...
Oh, in that photo?
Biceps look like they're as big as my head.
In that photo that's in the, yes. The chat, the middle guy is Terry Crews.
Okay.
Who is a big man. And the guy next to him is twice his size.
Huge.
Okay, dokie. Kimmy, they haven't let me talk about Ender's Game yet.
She's been on for 2 minutes, Kim.
Okay.
But Kimmy and I had cocktails and we're sleeping.
Biggie Langston, he looks, he's huge too.
Yeah, I can see. He's a power lifter. He's a world record holder. He's amazing.
All right, so let's talk about Ender's Game because Lee is a known narcoleptic, so we need to sort of help her
out. That's true, because we got to talk about Ender's Game and then
I haven't seen it, and I am ill, and I'm going to bail now.
Nice.
Feel better, sir. Hey, Serv. Give our best to Gwyneth.
I'll do just that.
How long till Gwyneth moves?
I think the plan is to begin December 9th.
And Serv, did you get the email I sent you this week?
No.
Or last week?
I don't think so. Unless it went into a... I hate these stupid new folders that Gmail's doing. Yes, I'll have to check again.
Check, because I think I sent you something you might want to look at. Okay.
Okay. All right.
And if you do move here around then, you should be here for the next big election that could sort of...
That's important to you.
Yeah.
That talks about the hour 4:20. Yeah.
Well, I could still go, cross the I-5 bridge anyway. But, hey, that's a whole different matter.
That's a whole different story.
Night, sir.
See you guys.
Next. All right. So, Ender's Game. Lee, go.
Okay. So, as someone who has not read the books.
Yeah.
Nor has anyone in this household read the books. We all enjoyed it as a movie. And we all thought it was very well done. Harrison Ford's mad, I don't give a shit face was a little scary. But we really liked it. And we would recommend it to especially people who are much like my kidlet, that age of 14, 15, who are thinking about war and ethics and things of that nature.
And what it's good for?
Absolutely nothing, Widge.
Hey, John, say that again.
War. Hey.
Good God, y'all.
What is it good for?
Now here's the big question.
Singing, you lose. Anyway, go.
Here's the big question, though, Lee. Since you went and saw Ender's Game, why do you hate gay people?
That's truly, I'm a critic. I had to go. What's your excuse?
JJ, thank you for giving me that opening. The fact is that
you
possibly only see Ender's Game.
I gotta mark that down.
Because Orson Scott Card sold all the rights in the 80s, and he got a flat fee for it. So he is getting no money, even being the producer, from the ticket sales. So number one is that. Number two is my son, who is now talking about, I'd really like to read the second
really
book.
Really hates gays.
In the middle, hold on a second. No, you know better. But my son, who is like, I'd really like to read the second book. And I said, no, we can't buy it. And he was like, okay, I understand why. And he did, because we talked about it. So we're going to go buy it at a used bookstore where Orson Scott Card will get absolutely jack shit money. Because we're going to buy it from somebody who sold it, and then we're buying it again.
Lee, let me actually see if we still have them here, because we might want to get rid of them, because Cosette read on into the series and stopped because she said the first book was the only one worth anything.
And she likes gays.
What I have heard from everybody is it's okay to read it. The first one is the only really good one. The second one is okay, and don't go any farther.
Well, there you go.
Do not go any farther.
Now, so let me... So let me ask this. Is there anyone on the podcast at this point who has not either read the book or seen the movie?
I have done neither and probably won't do either, so you can go ahead and talk and spoil
me. Are we going to spoil it? Do we want to put ourselves on a timer?
Well, we can put ourselves on a timer, so skip ahead a bit, because there's the big spoiler.
Yeah.
Want to say 10 minutes? I can mark it here.
And can I just say, Kim notwithstanding, because she's busy reading Hawkeye, all right?
Hawkeye!
Ender's Game is only, like, the number one science fiction book of, like, all the lists, so...
And it's actually, literally, which I have to talk about that, because I had bought it this summer... because I was going to read it. It was going to be kind of a beach read. And then I realized who Orson Scott Card was. And I went, yeah, no, not going to read it. But I read it because it's been on so many lists. And
yeah. Well, that was the same reason I did.
Along with Dune. And it's kind of along with even 2001 and some others. I mean, it is one of the biggest ever.
Right.
So,
Lee, here's my question.
Yep.
How did the twist work for you?
Well, okay, so I kind of knew a little bit of the twist. I didn't know exactly. So I kind of was waiting on it. I kept waiting on it through the whole thing. Mm. Kidlet and I don't think Hubby knew the twist at all. He's looking at me right now. No, he did not. They were both kind of, as they both said, they saw it coming, but they weren't sure.
Mm. Okay.
Kidlet had some serious issues with it. He saw it coming, but he still did not understand why they would do it that way. And he was very, and he understood Ender's angst and upset and anger at the end. And yeah, that's why he now wants to read the second book, because he wants to know what Ender does afterwards.
Right. Well,
I have to be honest. I don't know that if I had been reading the book, and Wid, you can talk about that, I don't know that I wouldn't have seen it coming. I saw it coming from the first one. I saw it actually coming from how they trained them, in all honesty.
Well, I think reading the book, what happened was you knew something had to happen because the end of the book was approaching.
And yeah, you're like, well,
something's got to happen here because we're running out of pages.
Yeah, that's like a Michael Crichton book. You get to that last 20 pages, you're like, all right, so how's he going to tie this up pretty easily? Yeah.
Well, I mean...
It won't be well done.
The problem that I had with the book is it translates into the movie pretty well, which is it just sort of ends.
Yeah. I mean,
because it's Ender's Game, but but basically it's like, but that's a design problem, you know?
Yeah,
go ahead.
Well, I think a part of the other issue, and I did wonder this, because Kidlet is now reading the book. I still have not. And he's like, Ender starts at 6. What age does he end it? Is he still 6 when he goes through the last one or not?
No, he's...
It takes
a while.
He's
there for a little while there, isn't he?
And that was actually something, again, one of the things of the movie versus the book is the, you know, in the book you can say, all right, he starts at this phase at 6, he's there for 6 months, he's here for a year and a half, whatever. But you don't get that sense.
Well, no, I mean, in the movie, everything's sped up. I mean... I honestly think he was there for like 6 days. I mean, it felt that fast.
It did feel that fast. And so you had that feeling. But I think in the book, Kidlet's kind of like, how old is he at the end? And I'm like, I don't know. So yeah. I think that's a part of it. I think the thing about Ender's Game, the movie, was you can get caught up in the actors. The actors are so good in this.
Oh, yeah, they're good.
Asa B is amazing. Haley is somebody we got to watch. It's kind of, I think of her a lot like I think about, Emma Watson, Hermione. Two to watch, because there is just something about them and their presence on the screen. And even, I mean, Harrison Ford, of course, all of the adult characters, I thought, and I'm of course blanking on names. Ben Kingsley,
well, Ben Kingsley, Viola Davis,
Gwyneth Paltrow.
Viola Davis, who is so
and
good.
And Gwyneth Paltrow, what? Yeah.
There's no Gwyneth Paltrow in it. Stop it.
It's just Gwyneth Paltrow in everything.
Go read your damn Vanity Fair. And then also even some of the supporting actors, the guy who plays the bad guy. Who I've seen in many other things, and he always kind of plays that snot-nosed kid that you just want to smack the hell out of as an adult. They're really good, and you get caught up in that feeling of them being that preteen teen going through everything they're going through as preteens and teens. And it's they do a very good job of that in the book. I'm sorry, in the movie. I don't know how well they do it in the book, but in the movie, I did feel for all of them at the end. And I was kind of teary, even though I knew it was coming. You know, I know Khan's not going to win, and I still, you know, I know Apollo 13, they're all going to live. I still got a little teary. So it's still there, and it's still packed a hell of a punch. Because there's a couple of things, and again, we're in spoilers, and I think we got a couple more minutes on this, but the thing that got to me as well was...
Caller, can you turn your radio down, please?
Hey, Duffles. I also think when Ben Kingsley says to Harrison Ford during the final battle, he's letting them die, and he's like, he's in charge now. And there is that feeling that sometimes you have to sacrifice to keep moving forward. And yet the question is, do you do that in real life or do you do that in game? And it's a question. It also, Widge, brings up some questions for me as a parent.
Right.
We've talked about this, that I'll let my kid play Halo. I won't let him play Call of Duty. What's the difference to me in one he's fighting aliens and one he's fighting humans?
Well,
did Ender's Game change your opinion?
For me, there's a difference for me, and I admit that I have created the biggest line in the sand ever in that distinction.
Well, I mean,
caller,
can you turn your radio down, please? Caller, are you there? Where
Jim,
we've got
Tuffle.
Tuffley.
Calling in from Topeka.
What?
Tuffley from Atlanta. Tuffley from Atlanta. You're on next.
Which
you're
mic
super
is on?
Loud.
Am I super loud?
Yeah. And it looks like it's your mic going from your computer and not the mic from your headset.
And super hot.
Ah.
But that's only what I've heard.
Oh, Skype upgraded.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it did. Yes, it did.
Yeah, nobody warned me.
Yeah, sorry. Especially not Skype. I know how it goes.
I didn't realize it until it started to log in. I went, hey, this screen looks different.
Yeah, that's probably why my mic is hot. Sorry.
That's okay. So
let me fix that.
Your mic's not the only thing.
Whoa!
As I said, Kimmy and I have had cocktails.
Woo!
Whoa, what?
That's why Kimmy's a little flirty with her husband.
Why is it always cock with you? That's an excellent question.
That's always a good question. So, but I'm sorry, Widge, you were saying.
Well, what I think Kim was making reference to is she's going to have to do an Iron Fist thing, a little Kun Loon later, you might say.
Well, they already talked about they had to build a new desk.
Okay, well, is that better?
I think so.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Lovely.
It's on the right mic now.
My problem was, like I said, they didn't convince me with the world building. I know they had a lot of ground to cover, but I just felt like, you know, give me something. Besides, we got our asses almost handed to us by these aliens. I'm like, well, don't show me a dogfight. I mean, that's...
Tell me. Show me the hand. Yeah,
something.
I agree.
Show me something. So, and I just... You've got a room full of kids that's anti-gravity. They're in these awesome suits. They got freeze guns. There's all these like floating star things. And I'm like, this is not exciting.
And not this one of them is having sex. Wait, what?
They were preteens at that age. So
well,
they wouldn't
some
there.
Of them were.
Maybe.
Hello.
Stop up.
But I, you know what I mean? It's like
Miley.
Last. Whoa. Yeah, that was the maneuver at the end, the wrecking ball. What? No. But I'm like, except for the last training mission, none of them were particularly exciting. And I'm like, this is like the ultimate in exciting thing ever. This would be, if you could make this, this would be like the biggest laser tag in the world. Everyone would fucking love this. Yep. And yet I'm bored. Well, and, hey, one last thing. And your final battle was less exciting than the final training battle. So I'm like, you didn't ramp it up properly.
Yeah. Well, now let me ask you this, because again, you've read the book and I haven't. I don't know how that the training simulator is described in the book. I think about Harry flying on the broomstick, and I remember reading that in Harry Potter thinking, oh my God, that had to feel amazing and all of that. I mean, I literally felt like, you know, I wish I could fly. And I don't know if you got that from the book. From this movie, to me, it wasn't like that big of a deal, because it was like, okay, this is just a training simulator for him. It's no different than if they'd put him in a cockpit and told him to have a pretend dogfight. So I guess I had it a little differently. Now, that just might be me.
Well, but to me, it's like...
By the way, we are over the 10-minute warning.
Okay, yes. Well, read a book. So my problem is, I mean, I remember what it was like.
Don't bitch about it either.
I remember what it was like to be that age.
Mm-hmm.
An anti-gravity room with freeze weapons and fucking stars that you could bounce around and off of. That's fucking awesome. That would have been
amazing. I will tell you, the 14-year-old was like, when the hell is that coming up? Because that would be awesome.
Yeah.
That's very good. I would agree with that.
Yeah.
Wedge, that's a spiritualized album. Gentlemen, we are floating in space.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are floating in space. I love that song.
The freeze gun to me, I literally, the freeze gun was the coolest thing ever. I want one so bad, it's just not funny. I really did. It's a really bad thing.
Part of the thing that you miss out on that I think it would actually work better as a series for is they build their strategy.
Yeah.
What you saw in this was, Ender is just so fucking awesome that he came up with all this on his own. They sort of build it as they go, and they have an opportunity to do their thing and learn, as opposed to Ender just being a savant.
Well, and I do think there is a bit of that kind of tactical, strategic savant that's a bit much in this. I do, because you're kind of like, okay, is it because, you know, I mean, they talk about being a good mix of his sister and his brother. Well, is that why you're the savant in you can see the tactical ways of different, you know, without even thinking about it? I think that should have been explored more. I think it's probably explored more in the book.
Oh, yeah.
So, again, that the movie has done what in some ways the movie's supposed to do, which is make you go buy the book.
Well,
interestingly, and kind of on that point, I read an article that where somebody had been doing research about like the intellectual sophistication of the strategies developed by children who play like World of Warcraft.
Mm-hmm.
And it was actually that same process. It was she saw how like they would go and do a test run and they would try stuff out, you know, like systematically to see how it worked. And also because she was making the argument that people are like, oh, video games aren't good for anything. But she's like, actually, there is very sophisticated intellectual work being done during this process. And it was very interesting.
Well, there is actually, as somebody who has watched a child play Minecraft and learn these games and learn even anything from Mario Universe up through it, I mean, the way he learns through it is partly, of course, I failed and now what I need to do, but it is partly just trying to figure out, okay, how do I fail? What do I fail at? Oh, that's the deal. Okay, so if I fail at it this way, then this is the next logical. It literally can kind of freak you out how they learn that way. Because you're seeing, I mean, you literally are watching it as they're building those connections in a way that maybe for us, when we were playing Risk and Stratego and Connect Four and Backgammon, which was mine, you didn't see how you did the logical steps. I mean, you learned from, okay, a six and a four should always go there, but you know what happens if I hit a six and a three? Okay, you have too many other ways to do that. So I don't know. It's just very different.
Did you know that with Stratego they've switched the numbers around?
No, I did not.
They made the higher numbers the more powerful ones.
Really?
Those jerks.
Why would they do that?
Well, yeah. Especially
when you go
to play.
For the same reason that they reordered the Chronicles of Narnia.
Oh, did they? I didn't hear that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Well, see, you have to remember, I only read
the one where they put Magician's nephew first.
Yeah.
Because it's first.
Oh, that.
But that's stupid because you don't care about all that stuff if you haven't read the other ones.
Exactly. What's the other book, Kim, that's the case? That if you don't read the other one, you don't. What was.
Was it Wrinkle in Time?
I don't remember.
I don't remember.
I know Firefly because I've now watched it both ways. I've watched it the way Wheaton wanted it to come out, and I've watched it the way Fox put it out. I will tell you, the way Fox put it out, I didn't give a shit about those characters by episode 3. However, when I watched it the way Wheaton wanted it, I was already in the universe. So very different.
Well, there you go.
So there, Fox, that was a bad decision you made.
See, Fox, you screwed up, you bastards. I have to say, I think much like people who have said they've seen the Harry Potter movies and haven't read the books and how much they enjoy it, and I'm like, oh my God, you idiots. What the hell? You idiots. Yeah, I think I'm on that part of the, oh, wow, I really enjoyed it as just a movie if I didn't know there was a book with it for Ender's Game.
Well,
and it did do the part of now I do want to read the book, and my kid is already reading the book. So,
well, to be fair, a movie's job is not to make you want to buy the book. A movie's job is to be a good movie.
Well, true.
And then if it's a good movie, then you go, oh, well, the book might be even better.
Better, I can't wait.
As opposed to, this movie was okay. Wow, I wonder if the book's better. That doesn't ever work.
That doesn't
But
I wonder if the book is slightly better than mediocre.
Yeah.
So is that the Stephen King rule in reverse?
Huh.
Fortunately, yes.
I can't wait. What with what?
I'm sorry. I will not be awake long enough to do recommendations, but I do want to recommend two books by Joe Hill. One is the Ghost Stories or Short Stories or whatever it is, his little compilation. And I'm now reading Heart-Shaped Box. I'm only 20 pages in, and it hurt me to put it down. So that says something.
American Ghost Stories.
It says you probably should go see a chiropractor.
Yeah.
No. Joe Hill, I literally, it really, really good writing.
And you have really? Not, if you have not read Nosferatu yet, then you haven't read. He grows with every book.
Well, and I have not. I just started. I got the short stories this summer. It was my beach reading, and then now I've just gotten Heart Shaped Box, and so yes, I cannot wait to read Nosferatu. I think that's going to be amazing. But literally 20 pages, I was putting it down because, Kimmy, we were meeting you guys for dinner. I was like, I don't want to, I kind of want to take it with me. But I didn't. So I get points.
There you go.
Okay, so are we going to talk about Thor now? Because then I have
to go.
Thor!
Okay. All right. I took notes during
Thor.
Can
I just say they were happy? Can you tell that already?
We were very happy. Oh, my God. Okay. Oh, my. All right. So, all right. There will be spoilers here. I know about
spoilers for Thor.
I am taking my earpiece out. You guys can talk. Just let me know when you're done.
I'm sorry, JJ. I'll
text you.
No, it's okay.
By the way, hi, JJ.
I am.
Hi, JJ. Okay, so I have a question.
Yeah.
No. I know the Easter egg with Captain America, and somebody said there's another Easter egg. What Easter egg did I miss?
Well, I don't know what you would mean by Easter egg.
Easter egg is usually hidden, and Captain America was not very well hidden.
Yeah, that wasn't exactly an Easter egg. It was pretty much right there.
So, Kim, I have a question for you. Yes. Why do elves always have pretty hair?
Because Tolkien?
Because they're not out in the sun as much.
Well, these elves all had pretty hair.
Because Orlando Bloom tried Pantene once just to try it, because all the cool elves were doing it. And then they just kind of snowballed.
Because they're worth it.
Because they're worth it? Okay, because honest to God, all the elves have pretty hair. I literally, all right, so I had to like dig, I wrote on the back of a receipt, and then I wrote on two napkins on my notes. So, I thought that it was funny that ether was bad because that for me, I'm actually allergic to ether and I vomit. So I thought that was pretty funny. What else? I have many more notes, but I'm not going to just read them out. Kimmy, what did you squee about?
So many things.
So many things.
We went to see it on Thursday night. And then we went to see it again Thursday on Friday night. We actually bought our tickets for Friday as we were coming out of the theater Thursday. That's really? How much we liked it.
How many times have you seen it?
Are you asking me how many times I've seen it?
Yes, John.
Once. Why would I see it more than once?
Well, did you take it? Did you take your kids?
Because it's awesome.
Yes, yeah. I took both William.
Because
your wife
went? Oh, sorry.
My daughter and, you know, my daughter's friend.
Oh, okay. Your wife didn't go?
Nope. She had no interest in seeing it.
Helmsworth was half naked.
Yes, she saw the first one.
That's reason to go see that.
Well,
yes, but he was totally naked in Rush.
That's what I was about to say. If that's your only criteria, then you should go see Rush.
Sure. I'll see it at some point.
Which you should anyway, because it's a good film.
By the way, Rush was a good movie. You should see it.
It was. And now we're talking about Thor.
It's a fairly decent band as well.
Time out. Is everyone hearing an echo?
Yes.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are floating in space again.
John, are you not hearing it?
Nope. No.
Okay, we're back where we were. So it doesn't come through on the mix, so we'll just have to wade through it as best we can.
Stop now.
Skype's updated.
I have to say, there were many questions I had from Thor. Number one is if Selvig went a little crazy because, again, we're talking about spoilers. We have massive questions about Clint. So, yes.
Although, if the side effect to being mind controlled by Loki is that you take all your clothes off all the time, I'd be okay with that.
But you're asking
the question if Clint was stable to begin with, and obviously he's not.
Well, because he's Clint Barton, but it's a different kind of unstable.
Well, here's the thing that I sort of figured out, and I wish they had made more explicit in the film, because it was just sort of weird that what they did with Selvig, that he's now loony. And I was like, if they had done any line that said, well, the reason, because remember, he said in the Avengers, the cube has told me so much.
Yeah.
And so basically he's being flooded with information by the Tesseract. So that would make you go a little bit wonky, I would think. And if they had just established that rather than had me have to figure it out,
this was a movie where I needed two lines. I needed to know what was different with Selvig that made him take off all his clothes and run around naked. Not that that was a bad thing, but we do need to understand it. And where the fuck was S.H.I.E.L.D.?
Lee,
give it next week. We saw that on TV.
Right, I was gonna say.
I can't wait. Yeah.
So that the answer is coming in a week.
That bothers me.
I was okay about S.H.I.E.L.D. in the film because Darcy explicitly is trying to contact them and not being successful.
Yes.
Like they did talk about S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yes. As opposed to Iron Man 3, where they got files from S.H.I.E.L.D., but the problem was, at that point, you've got huge terrorist organization threatening the country. Where the fuck is S.H.I.E.L.D.? Right. As opposed to this, which is Earth doesn't really know anything's happening until giant fucking ship shows up and starts, you know, plowing into the Earth.
Circles in the sky.
And also, I think it's on purpose that they're in London, which is not close enough to New York for, like, the helicarrier to book it over there once the ship appears.
Yeah, no, that happened far too fast for anybody to show up.
Those jets were S.H.I.E.L.D., though.
Were they?
Were they?
We don't know if they were S.H.I.E.L.D. or if they were British.
I thought they were RAF.
Anything. Honey, tell them your theory. Tell them your theory about the jets. I like that theory.
Is one of them Benjamin Braddock?
Is
one of them Benny?
Could be. One of them could be Benjamin Braddock. I didn't think about that. But the other one could be that Carol Danvers is the other pilot.
That would be so cool.
Nice.
Because you only hear the one talking. You don't hear the other one, but there's two, and there are...
Hang on. Lee, go.
I said, dear Marvel, take that idea from Tuffley. That is awesome.
Yes, but pay Tuffley. Go Tuffley.
But pay us all.
if you recall, every single bloody shot of the Dark Elves' armor, you get their chest plate. And the emblem on their chest plate is kind of familiar.
I don't remember it. I'm sorry.
Actually, I don't either.
Yeah, it's every time you saw a Dark Elf, the chest plate on their armor, there's a little emblem.
Hang on, let me see if I can find it and put it
in. No, I got it. It's basically very Kree-like, shall we say.
It is very, very Kree-like.
Yes.
Interesting.
Well, paint it gold, and it's been on a costume.
There we are. Well, I thought I did actually like the Dark Elf idea. I thought that was very interesting. I liked Eccleston. Not as Widge, much as you said in The Way Homer. I mean, how could he be bad? He was playing an elf and he had makeup on. Never bad. Yeah. But I don't think he'd ever go for it. But dear God, a bitch face off from Eccleston and Hiddles would be fucking awesome. Because they both had the best bitch face in so many scenes. It was just those two actors were just
having the time of their lives. Well, hang on. What is a bitch face?
Just the bitch please face that Eccleston had a couple of times. Loki had a couple of times of just like, yeah, whatever. Whatever. You do not bother me. You do not scare me. You do not. Bitch, please. Get out of my face. It was awesome.
Ah. That makes
the
sense.
The bitch face. Yeah.
Okay, I'm with you.
Okay.
Need Coffee and, Presents Urban Dictionary.
Yeah. I did think it was very funny. At one point, though, when I thought the Loki bondage gear, Kim, I bet you liked that, didn't you?
Why are you singling me out in this?
Because you're Kim?
Because I do like the Loki bondage gear.
I thought that all of Loki's scenes were really good.
No, I didn't say anything about his scenes. I said about his costume, Loki bondage gear. You want that little action figure, don't you?
Actually, my favorite Loki costume is in Avengers and in Thor 1, where he's in the like the coat and the scarf. I like those. Okay.
Well, okay. Technically,
although at least he didn't have that ridiculous helmet. Because seriously,
technically that's not true, because her favorite Loki costume was, you know, a cameo. So,
well, yeah,
which cameo?
Are we spoiling that?
Which, what
are we
very in?
What other cameo is there?
Well, I didn't know if we were talking about this movie or another movie, so I did wonder. Oh, sorry, Kim.
No, I just want to point out, okay, that this is a genre film, a superhero film. That has four named female characters who have interesting conversations and things to do that are motivated by their own characters, and they are all different from one another. Mm-hmm. And none of them at all could be replaced by a sexy lamp.
Nope. And
I just want to applaud that this movie.
I would applaud that. And you know, it was really funny because we went with another friend of ours who loves both DC and Marvel. And he was like, I'm kind of surprised you're into comics. And I'm like, well, so am I. But what I'm reading so far in Marvel, I'm enjoying because, you know, it's kind of amazing when women don't get fridged. And he looked at me and he went, yeah, that's a point. I was like, thank you. I mean, it just very different. And again, the spoilers of a major, you know, the death of a major character had a reason.
Right. And the other thing I like about that was that it is very common, especially in like comic book movies, for the only reason. Okay, I'm going to compare, for example, this is not a comic book movie, but it's a genre film. The first Star Trek reboot. Okay. Mm-hmm. The only reason that Spock's mom was there was so that she could die and make him sad. That's all she was there for.
I would agree.
The only reason that Kirk's mom was there was so that she could give birth to Kirk and then basically disappear.
Yep.
Frika, on the other hand,
when your mom gets back to the planet, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Frigga, on the other hand, is obviously badass in her own way. She they did a nice job of showing that Loki was always kind of mom's boy, Like, well, like he was more identified with her, whereas Thor is more identified with Odin. They show that she had the magic in common with him. And it also brings up some very interesting things about our
Guardians. Hang on, Lee. Hang on. Keep going, Kim.
Sorry.
Yeah, like, no, it's okay. Like, I think that brings up some interesting points about Asgardian gender roles and gives some insight into why Loki never was going to fit in Asgard. Because if you think about it, you know, what are women supposed to do in Asgard? Well, magic. They can fight with swords, but mostly they're with magic and they're kind of the power behind the throne. Whereas,
right,
you know, the guys, it's Thor, it's the Warriors Three. Sif is trying, and you see, this is one of the reasons that I kind of ship Loki and Sif, because they're kind of coming at the whole Asgardian gender role problem from opposite sides. Loki is a guy who likes women stuff, and Sif is a woman who likes guy stuff in their culture, which I think makes it sort of interesting. But Frigga, and also the other thing that was good about it is, even though she died and her death was motivating in the plot, everybody reacted to it differently in accordance with the relationship they had with her, which had already been established. So she didn't exist to die and motivate some guys.
No, right. I agree. I mean, and also her death was... her death wasn't a death to make everybody upset. Her death was a death to save another. It was a hero's death. She went out fighting, which I think is amazing. I also think the other thing that I loved about Frigga, and because we didn't see it as much in the first one, and I also want to talk about Natalie Portman. She didn't have much to do in the first one, but in this one, you actually see her defying Odin.
Mm-hmm.
Odin has said you will never see her again. No, you do see, Loki does see her again. She does visit him, maybe not in person, but through magic. And she does bring him books, and she does do this because she has not yet given up on Loki.
Right. And also,
and there is that goes along with, that's the part of her that Thor has.
Mm-hmm.
And you see Thor as both parents.
And she's apparently talked Odin down on the sentencing too.
Right. Agreed. And agreed. I mean, I just thought it was great. I mean, I have to say, I thought the death, I liked the idea of the Viking funeral with the fire and all of that. I thought it was gorgeous. It was fucking gorgeous, but it also did give me, there were two times when I kind of flash back to Star Wars, and that was one of them with Amidala, as you saw her going down the road, and you see Frigga in her thing with the flowers, and you know, oh, the beautiful woman who's, you know,
that must have been
thing.
One of those Star Wars I never saw.
Well, lucky
I gave up on it after Phantom Menace.
Well, but
it's one of those Star Wars that doesn't actually exist. So
gotcha, like Highlander 2.
Yes, Highlander 2. I also, Natalie Portman, Jane Foster in this, who you just want to adore because it's Natalie Portman. But the other one, I just kept thinking that they went up to Natalie Portman during all the negotiations and said, hey, look, guess what? You're not going to have much of a part here. You're going to kind of play the sciencey geek, and you're going to do this, that, and the other. It's not that great. I mean, you're really kind of just a little bit of a love interest. But trust me, in number two, you are going to kick ass and take names and be like the destroyer of worlds. Because so now I know why I always wanted to like Jane Foster, and now I do. Now I have a reason behind me liking her, other than just it's Natalie Portman, and I think Natalie Portman.
Lee, you just like the idea of slapping gods around.
I did think that was awesome.
She likes the idea of slapping Hiddleston around.
Well, no, what was great was, did you see the, somebody put it up on Pinterest, one of those animated GIF caption things of Hemsworth and Hiddleston.
I'm familiar
with those. Yes, Wi-Fi I'm sure only. Hemsworth and Hiddleston basically saying that they belong to the Natalie Portman is Slap Me Club. And we're commenting on just how pleasant it was.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would be fine being in that club.
I would. I'm totally there.
I don't know that there's many on us right now that wouldn't line up for that.
I mean, I love the scene where she's in Asgard and she's in the healing thingy and she's geeking out over it being a quantum wave, and how the Asgardian person is like, oh, well, yes, that is what it does. You're right. And she's like, ha ha, I told
and
you.
And that was a great cameo, by the way. I wonder if that's a setup for something large.
Yeah, Alice, I saw that and I went, yeah, that's too big of a name to just have for this little tiny part.
Yep.
Yeah, I thought that was really good.
I know she looked familiar, but I didn't.
Yes, Borg Queen.
Borg Queen.
It was the Borg Queen who is in English things, and it's just amazing. I think the other thing that I loved in this movie was there was, and I read some things about it, that there was a dark tone, but oh my God, there was so much great. There were great lines. There was great sass. I mean, it was funny, and yet it wasn't stupid funny. And Loki, oh my God, is like the queen bitch of sass. I mean, that was just awesome.
Well,
the whole escape sequence had me rolling. I thought it was just fantastic. I would watch a series of epic films like they need to do On the Road with Thor and Loki.
Well, My thing is, Hiddleston, to me, his best moments were when they would cut back to him in the cell and he would have no lines.
Uh-huh.
Yeah,
it was just him watching, gauging, biding his time. It was like, it's really nice.
Well, and also, I loved the scene where Thor calls him out and is like, get rid of the glamour. Just show me what you're really doing. And
that was
as somebody who has lost a parent. You have a period where you go through and you show everybody your good face. And at some point, and I'm kind of tearing up about it, at some point you break. And at some point you, whatever that break is, whether it is when my grandmother died, my dad stayed up all night and he got like all of his shoes and he shined all of his shoes all night long because that was his breaking point. And he just... For me, when my dad died, I just remember getting through the funeral and everything else and then going and like looking at a picture of my dad and my sister and I and just breaking down when I got back to the house. And even though we had known it was coming. So him sitting against that wall, disheveled, his feet cut, his clothes messed. That's not Loki that we've seen through everything else. And that to me was great directing, great writing, and great acting. And just especially for what we want to call a bubblegum movie. Just great. I loved it.
And here's what I think is interesting is that you've got name enough people in here and Marvel wants them around for the long haul. They've got to give them stuff to do.
Mm-hmm.
You can't just, I mean, hence Iron Man 3 being a bit different and giving Downey more stuff to do outside of the suit where he's still Iron Man. You have Hemsworth with more stuff to do where the character's actually growing. What a concept.
Yes.
Hiddleston having stuff to do. Hell, even Hopkins had more stuff to do. Everyone had more stuff to do. You even had somebody actually gave Ray Stevenson a decent costume this time. I was so happy.
Well, I was very surprised. Why did we get two new... Does anybody know why we got two new Warriors 3? Because the blonde guy was...
Yeah, Zach Levi took the part because the one guy couldn't get released from Grimm.
No, wasn't he on Once Upon a Time?
Whatever one he's on, he couldn't get released from. Yeah,
which is weird because Once Upon a Time is a ABC Disney. Studio production, which is owned by Disney, which owns Marvel, which
it must have been a scheduling thing.
It must have been pure scheduling.
The interesting thing about Thor too is, yes, you had Idris Elba, and you had Hemsworth, and you had, you know, Rene Russo, and all these other people in an amazing cast. But what they managed to do is give them all parts that sort of marginalized. And this isn't a bad thing, but they picked a villain with Eccleston that wasn't high profile that had to do a whole lot. So Eccleston was on the screen and kind of underused, but the villain sort of got the fewest amount of screen time, which is interesting in a movie where there's supposed to be a bad guy fighting the rule, you know, the world.
The other interesting thing, too, is that what happens is Odin almost becomes he's like the second antagonist.
Yeah.
And it's very interesting because it's uncommon in a superhero movie where you actually have multiple factions that are aligned with each other or not to varying degrees. which makes it a lot more interesting.
And Lee, like, there was only the Fandral was replaced. Nobody else was replaced.
Oh, I thought the Hogan
was replaced.
No,
same
guy. Yeah, same guy.
He just looked very different. Maybe
he just wasn't in most of the film.
Yeah.
Well,
they did a Jet Li Expendables 2 with him.
Maybe. Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, Rob.
Although I did think Zach Levi was really good as fans.
Oh, I thought they were both good. I did think it was two of them got replaced, but I didn't have any issues with any of those replacements. I thought they were great. And again, yeah. Sif, dear God,
I love her so much.
She's awesome. And I know a lot of people were worried there was going to be like Sif and Jane, you know, cat fights. I think the issue for Sif, and they played it very well, which is, yeah, she wouldn't mind climbing that. But the other issue is, look, she's a warrior with him, and that's the concern that she has for him.
Well, besides the fact that her life, I mean, it's actually a very legitimate point. You know, her lifespan is a fraction of Thor's.
Yes.
You know, right. And that is a significant issue.
Well, yeah, but as will hopefully become clear, because I'm really enjoying how Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and don't spoil anything, I haven't seen tonight, but how
so
Agents
good.
Of S.H.I.E.L.D. is playing around with the concept of after stuff happens, shit is lying around.
Yeah.
Which you don't normally see, not even in the comics, really. I mean, they only do it when it's here's this crazy plot that we can drum up. But I like that concept. So eventually, you're going to have to see stuff like, I mean, Thor's a god. He's going to figure out a way that Jane Foster's going to live a long damn time.
Uh-huh.
He's a god, which is the whole problem that I had with, you know, Peter Parker in Brand New Day. It's like, I'm sorry, you hang out with gods and you know the Sorcerer Supreme on a first name basis and you're going to Satan to help your Aunt May? What the fuck is that about?
Like, surely one of the other people with vast cosmic powers you know and live with.
Oh, I'm sorry. And Reed Richards, too. That's right. The smartest man on the planet. Yeah. You know him, too. But let's go to Satan.
He can just pull alternate universe Aunt May.
Oh, just, yeah. Or Tony Stark.
Oh, you mean the one that's...
the one that married the mole man?
Yes, exactly, Kim. Call back. So, Rob, what were you going to say?
Or even ultimate Aunt May.
Rob, what were you going to say?
Okay, maybe it's just me and I'm being weird, but I want to see if anyone else caught this. The elves are dark elves, right?
Yes.
But
on their uniforms, on their chest plates, they have this like shining gold or shining like star thing that looks an awful lot like the Kree armor.
Hey, yes. we were there earlier, Rob.
Earlier.
Unsolicited testimonial.
We're hoping that means that Captain Marvel is coming to the Marvel Cinematic Universe soon.
Why, did this already come up as a subject and I just randomly brought it up again?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, good. I feel good.
Actually, Softly brought it up. You two are like mind twins.
Well, you know, and Kim
I'll
and I
think
were
that's a compliment.
Yeah. Kim and I were talking about this earlier because I liked the idea. First of all, the ending, the little teaser at the end got me excited for Guardians of the Galaxy. I'm sorry, Benicio del Toro will get me interested in a movie because I just think he's such a great actor. And then all of a sudden I went, it looks like they're talking about the gems and the Infinity Gauntlet. And I was, oh my God!
Lee has realized that she knows what the Infinity Gauntlet is now.
Nice.
So Lee,
not be a comics nerd.
I cannot. Rob. Yeah. Yeah.
So Lee, when I'm watching the event, when I'm watching Thor, right? I'm watching them go into the building in London that has the weird time eddy bounce around beer can thing. And I'm watching the weird sort of ice dog or whatever and all the other things going along. And the first thing I thought of is, where the fuck is Torchwood? Because believe it or not, this Thor movie sets up the perfect Torchwood Thor crossover or Torchwood. But. Because you totally could see Torchwood coming and showing up when they have this big anomaly going on in the middle of the, you know, and then you have the cop coming up and bothering, you know, Ian the intern. It's like, oh, it would be great if that was not Gwen, but her one friend.
PC Andy,
yeah. So I'm just like, oh, my God, there's so many openings for Torchwood in here. What the hell is wrong with
me? And not only that, but what's its face? The other show that was about the portals with stuff coming through it?
Christ. Stargate?
No, no, the British show.
Shit. Oh, Primeval.
Yes, thank you.
There's Primeval and Primeval US now. Yes, okay, yeah.
Primeval US, didn't that get canned?
Both of them got canned,
yeah.
Yes.
Wait, right. I've not seen either of them.
US get canned? I didn't realize.
Yeah, the Primeval US spinoff, it happened and it's dead already.
Yep.
Oh, it's pretty dead again.
The US spinoff, which was made in Canada. But yeah.
Come on, man.
How great was that one-liner when they were walking through the cave to go back to Earth and Thor just goes, why are there so many shoes here?
Yes, that was great.
And Jane picking up the keys and things like little tiny things that you're like, thank you. You did
well,
that.
What's interesting, though, is one, somebody has Rose Tyler's phone, and two.
Well, hang on, Rob. You're very muddled.
Sorry, there we go. Okay. There, is that better?
Yes, okay. Much better.
Sorry, it's snowing here. So anyway, one, someone's got Rose Tyler's phone. The other interesting, thank you, Tyler Veal. The other kind of interesting thing with he was great at it, but the other thing is that, you know, they switched directors during this movie, which is part of the reason they had to go back and do the reshoots, because one of the chase scenes was supposed to be at the front of the movie and not the back, and they did some switching around, and they weren't sure Portman was going to sign on to do it, because the director they got rid of was somebody I think she worked with on Black Swan. So the fact that they, A, managed to get her to stay, and B, got her to do such a great performance, it's pretty amazing.
Oh. Well, Can we talk about Darcy, too? Because I really
I was going to get to that. Yeah.
Darcy was awesome.
She cracked me up. Dead. I adore that first scene because, okay, as a person who telecommutes for part of my week, I am completely familiar with the situation that you could be in where one of your friends might say to you, hey, you're wearing lady clothes. Did you shower? You smell good. So I appreciate that. And also the part about the lab / your mom's house.
I thought that was hysterical. And I love Darcy calling her out on stuff. I think Darcy, we were worried was going to be too much comic relief. And yet, again, was a fully fleshed character. And a female! Oh my god! And we're so happy.
The thing I like about Darcy is she is very much kind of an ordinary person in weird circumstances. I mean, they say that about Coulson, but I have issues with the depiction of Coulson as everyman, which we can talk about later if we want to. But Darcy really is kind of the everyman character, so to speak. She is... Yeah. And her reaction, I love her in Thor.
6 hours science credit.
Yes. When she asks him, how was space? And he just says, space is good.
Yeah. That was good.
I just think there's so many little bits of it, of course. You know, I saw, you know, when Thor comes back at the end, and I was like, I was so happy he and Jane, yay, they're together. But then the part of me was like, oh God, and now I can live in Avengers Tower with Tony and Captain America and everybody. I had the fangirl geeky moment right then.
Yeah.
So happy.
But Thor's favorite. I'm thinking Avengers 3 is your Infinity Gauntlet.
Yeah.
Thanos.
Yeah,
I couldn't remember.
Yeah, because Thanos is only getting a bit part in Guardians because that's what they keep saying.
Yeah, they do keep saying that because they say he is the boss of the bad guy.
Well, you kind of have to save Thanos for a while. It's, you know, you don't want to blow your big bad all at once.
And obviously, I think what they're leading to in the end game is that Loki is slightly behind gems being acquired.
Well, but, you know, I there were questions that were raised by that end, which is, where is Odin?
We think that Loki may forced him into the Odin sleep.
That
was a great out for them, too, because one, Hoppy said he doesn't want to do anymore, and two, even if he does, they have no guarantee he's going to live long enough to the next one.
What I thought was interesting, though, and I wanted to mention this, was the... was Anthony Hopkins' performance at the end, where he's basically doing Anthony Hopkins playing Tom Hiddleston playing Anthony Hopkins.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes, he did.
That was a nice layer to it. Yeah.
There was a nice layer because there was, you saw that and you were like, there's something just a tiny bit off, but what is it? And is it because he's telling his son goodbye and he knows that his son is not going to follow, you know, because a part of you is like, well, it's because the king knows that the prince is not going to follow the king. But then it's like, oh, that's what it's all about. Got it there.
And there's a real nice reaction shot when Thor talks about Loki dying with honor.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Where he just kind of cuts his eyes over to the side. You're like, oh. Watching that for the second time when you know from the beginning, it's really cool.
I love the one-liners. And honestly, I know the movie is Thor, the Dark World. But seriously, it could have just been, you know, the Thor and Loki show. And I would have still been there.
But, oh, God.
Well, and you've got basically Loki's not in Avengers 2.
Yeah, so, they basically opened the door for Loki to be kind of behind the gem thing.
Well, yeah, but I mean, they're letting him rest, which I think is a good.
Yeah, which is good. Although, I mean, I suspect that what they're coming around to is some sort of they have to team up for the to defeat the annihilation of all blah 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 blah.
Well,
Thanos.
Doesn't Loki become a good guy, or at least not a neutral character at some point?
Loki is pretty much. He's like the epitome of chaotic neutral. He's always doing things for his own reasons. And even when you think you know what the reason is, there's always another layer to it. Like you can never trust anything you think you see with Loki. And that's why he's so interesting.
Journey into Mystery is really, really a good read. And you should
check Young
that
Avengers.
Out. Yeah.
Too, that has kid Loki in it is very, very. Very good. And I'm actually very excited about the Loki Agent of Asgard book that's coming out next year. I think that has a lot of potential. But the interesting thing is, in the comics, wasn't there a period of time where Loki replaced Odin and was actually a fantastic King of Asgard?
Yes, there is. I believe so.
And there's one where he was a woman.
Yes.
Yes.
That was before he was a kid.
Well, I mean, I think the other thing is Thor, Odin says it very well, whether it's Odin as Loki or anything else, which is, I have one son who doesn't want to rule, and I have one son who wants to rule too much. Was this Loki's, as much as Thor has learned about being humble and empathetic and compassionate from his time on Earth, has Loki learned something being in that cell? Because that was what the question was. I hope. I could hope.
Well, here's my whole thought about that. Loki hiding Loki for two reasons needs to become Odin for a while. Number one, to lay low from New York.
Mm.
Number two, after a while, Loki's going to get bored ruling and being successful at it, which is why he sends the ether to the Collector.
That was very interesting to me. So tell me again, even though I've lost a lot of my – I'm not a comic book fan, but I'm still a sci-fi fan, Creed. I'm now reading comics and some other things. Tell me, what the hell is the Collector? Because that guy is freaky, and I can't wait to know more.
I don't know. I don't follow Guardians.
Yeah, he's been in more than Guardians. I would say wait and watch the movie.
Okay.
It explains itself.
Only got a year, right?
I'm pretty sure that he's a person who collects stuff, Lee.
Yes.
Yeah, I figured that part out. Yeah.
Lee, also, from what I can tell, just by the bit of Del Toro that we saw, he's playing it different than I remember the Collector being in the comic.
Okay.
Much more eccentric.
Yeah, the Collector in the comic is way more eccentric, way more weird. He's one of the Eternals, right?
Yeah.
No, not an Eternal.
Is that what they were called? I thought they were called Eternals.
No.
I thought he was.
Hang on.
You always check Wikipedia.
Marvel Wiki?
Elder of the Universe.
Oh, Elder. You're right. Yeah.
Yes. So
is that the same as a Time Lord?
No.
Kind of? No.
Okay. But I was going to see Guardians of the Galaxy because, of course, that leads to Avengers 2 and yay. But no, I'm going to see Guardians of the Galaxy because I want to see Guardians of the Galaxy now. You won. You win. You got it. I'm going. I can't wait.
I'm still skeptical about the damn talking raccoon, but I'll see it too because I've loved every other one except for the Hulk one. Like, really, the only one that I haven't found something to just squee and delight over was the Hulk one.
Well, but bear in mind, again...
And it wasn't even the Hulk we have now, so it's
no,
like...
No, I know, but bear in mind, the Hulk movie was basically them having to crawl out of the hole that that Ang Lee created. Are we done with spoilers?
The beautiful, beautiful hole?
Don't say that around John.
Awesome.
Can we talk about the Cap trailer, too?
Sure we can. Are we done with... Hang on.
Can we bring JJ back then?
Hang on. Are we done with spoilers?
Yeah, you can... Done, yeah. Bring JJ.
JJ, you can take the headphones off, and we have the results of the paternity test. Stay tuned for that.
We have to wish JJ back onto the podcast. Everyone wish as hard as you can.
Clap, 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 clap. Like Tinkerbell, clap.
Okay, JJ, the results of the paternity test are in. We can tell you now if you'll just take off the headphones.
Leave that song.
JJ, are you there? JJ?
I'm here.
JJ, we saw the test. And I'm your baby daddy.
Oh, interesting.
Hey, JJ?
Yes.
The movie's actually about the Thor from Adventures in Babysitting.
Oh, fantastic. D'Onofrio.
Yes.
Nice.
Oh, God, that was D'Onofrio, wasn't it? Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah.
Wow, that is a callback. Who looks a hell of a lot like Mark Ruffalo. Oh, my God, another callback. Okay. Wow, we're all old.
Please, thanks for letting us borrow your kid.
No, you're not getting to borrow my kid. No.
The Captain America trailers.
Yeah, so we're done with spoilers. We're going to talk Cap trailer.
I am looking forward to that movie like you would not believe.
I know.
Which one?
Cap.
So it should be mentioned that there is actually more footage in the 3D version than there is in the 2D version.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, the trailer I saw in front of the 3D was something I had actually never seen before.
Oh, Thor, you mean? Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Well, yeah, that's the only trailer I've seen. It's a 5-minute one.
Well, can I just say that the elevator scene is everything that I wanted it to be?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. It's so awesome.
They showed the whole thing.
They showed the whole elevator scene, yes.
All right, I might have to go see Thor in 3D. No, I also have to say, okay, so maybe the helicarrier doesn't just have a little boo-boo. Maybe it has been 127 days since we broke our last helicarrier. But, yeah, I'm still...
They have a lot of freaking helicarriers, apparently.
Well, you know, S.H.I.E.L.D. put out Velcro, man. They got
I do have to say that based on what we've been seeing on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is that S.H.I.E.L.D. is a lot more extensive than I would have otherwise thought.
That's exactly true. I mean, S.H.I.E.L.D., I mean, that if they are using those together, yeah, the hub, oof, boy.
Yeah.
Spoiler for tonight.
One of those priceless commercials with S.H.I.E.L.D., you know.
Yeah.
Slight spoiler. That was nothing. Wedge.
A very slight spoiler. You see another S.H.I.E.L.D. thing. You see yet another S.H.I.E.L.D. base that we hadn't previously seen. So, I mean, they've got... They have a freaking helicarrier hangar under the Potomac River.
Yeah.
Damn.
Hey, I didn't know it's Potomac. Thanks.
DC, right? What else?
All
would it
I know
be?
Is what I've seen in trailers. So there's
yes,
no
Rob, we've spoiled geography for you. Sorry.
Hey, wait a minute. I went to Alabama schools, so yes, you have spoiled geography.
Oh, I was going to say something, but I realized JJ was on, so I can't say anything. Damn.
No, you can't say about that. But
Wiz will understand when I say what they did with the Captain America costume was awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I've seen enough that I know that he gets the
Commander Rogers.
The other costume.
The Commander Rogers outfit, yeah.
Yeah.
Commander Rogers outfit. I think
gotta say though too, and I remember saying this as I just didn't know if I was gonna like Chris Evans' Captain America.
Oh, I didn't either.
Oh, he's perfect.
Oh my God, he is awesome and he's adorable and he has just the right amount of sass and snark and thank you.
But see, here's the thing. Is that first of all, remember, this is the guy who's been, this is his fourth comic book movie.
I know.
So, and he's different in every single damn one.
Yes.
But again, the Captain America casting is crucial because you have to believe that Thor and Iron Man, and to a lesser extent, the Hulk,
would do
are going
what that
to,
guy says.
Yes. And the entire, yeah. For me, I mentioned this before, the entire phase one of Marvel Cinematic Universe hinges on the line, call it Captain.
Yeah.
Because at that point, they're a team and you have to believe that that happens. And
like that,
that is why I fucking love that movie, is because you just see, like, you know, 7 years of planning fall into place. And it's just like, holy shit, that was great.
Well, in just, I mean, yes, before Thor 2D, because we did not go to 3D, I mean, seeing that Captain America trailer, there was a little switch in me, and it was just, they were winding me up. And they're like, look, we're going to get you ready and ready and ready. And no, okay, here's Thor 2. And you're just like, yay, I can't wait.
Now,
bouncing up and down in my chair.
Did I see Falcon in the movie, in the trailer?
Yes.
Okay.
Anthony Mackie is Falcon.
Yes?
Really cool.
Anthony Mackie.
Ooh, okay. I did not know Falcon was in it. Because I just tried to. Awesome.
And I just saw something that was just out that's talking about Avengers, and he is now in the picture of the Avengers in the background, like right behind Cap's head.
Yeah,
and it's all the other Avengers and him. And I
Falcon's in Avengers too.
So is Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver.
I saw a picture of it, and I cannot remember what it was.
Falcon and Hawkeye should be friends.
I think. Well, Hawkeye was in the picture too. So
should the farmer and the cowman.
yes, they should. I've been really pleased with what I've seen. I was excited about Winter Soldier because of the Winter Soldier, I was excited about that part. And the previews so far haven't even shown him that much and have made me really excited. Like, I'm very, very interested. There have been some really great Winter Soldier shots in some of those trailers, which have made me very excited. And also have been laden with symbolism for those who have read comic books and know who the Winter Soldier is. But, I'm excited about him and Natasha spending some time together. I'm excited about the whole conflict between S.H.I.E.L.D. and Cap. And I think that that's going to be very neatly led up to by some of the themes that they're playing with in the actual Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. show. I'm interested to see what's up between Fury and Robert Redford. Everything I see of it really interests me and or is freaking cool. And when I saw him jump out of the plane without the parachute, I thought of you.
God, that made me so happy.
Why does that make you happy? Help me.
Because that was okay. My Captain America, because apparently I've talked to people who've read Captain America, and apparently every time I dipped into Captain America is when I shouldn't have, because it was sucking. I never got into Captain America and I wanted to. So for me, the first awesome Captain America was the Ultimates Captain America, because my Captain America can walk up to the Hulk and kick him in the nads. That's my Captain America. And my Captain America, basically, there's a scene in the Ultimates where he jumps out of a plane without a parachute, and Bucky is there and goes, oh, yeah, Cap thinks that parachutes are for sissies. And I was just like, oh, that's fucking fantastic.
See, the Captain America I remember, shows you how old I am, is I remember going to buy the Bicentennial Captain Americas, the Black Falcon, in like 75 and 76.
Ooh.
So I was like, you know, I was like done. So I was like between like 76 and like maybe 81 or 82. And then probably in the last 2 or 3 years, that's kind of where I am with. So I have a lot of gray area with him. I don't know, which is nice. So it's the same way that Thor is nice, because I don't know all the backstories of Thor, whereas Iron Man, I've read most of those. So it's kind of nice for me just to sort of watch it with complete no pretensions going in about what the character should or shouldn't be like.
Well, and that's actually, Rob, something I think that I was worried about with all of these movies, because I didn't read comics as a kid. I didn't. It wasn't a part, you know, it wasn't a part of what I did. And I was worried that as much as a sci-fi fan, as much as some of the other things I love, I do love heroes and things like that, that I wasn't going to get into them. I've gotten so into them that now I'm into comics. And so I love these movies. I was Kim, as much as you were bouncing in your seat, so was I. I mean, the friend I went and I do. I have my napkins here with my notes on them that talk about bitch face with Hiddleston and Eccleston. And my friend was like, "You are the ultimate comic geek," and I'm like, "I never was before."
Well, see, and this is interesting because, quite honestly, I always used to be really turned off by comics because it was all about, like, here, let's get all the women to wear as little as possible and pose them so that we can see their tits and ass at the same time.
By the way, at some point, they're all going to die in a way that does absolutely nothing. Right, yeah.
You know, like, there was, as a woman,
or
as much
Starfire.
As I've always loved sci-fi and as much as I've loved genre stuff, I never connected. There were very few comics that I connected with. I read Watchmen and liked it. I read Sandman and liked it. I read Phonogram and liked it. But until I started getting into Marvel because of the movies, I was really just not at all, you know, and actually put off by a lot of it. But one thing I will say, you know, they're not perfect, but Marvel, especially lately, seems to be really genuinely making an effort to be better in that area.
In
the comics and in the films.
Well, but so
and
here's
in, my... just kind of as a brand. I mean, they did that whole thing with Natalie Portman co-sponsoring the young female scientist mentor contest thing that they did.
Yeah.
Right. You know, I mean, they seem to be genuinely making an effort.
Well, they get the big thing that Marvel gets is they get to, with their films, they're making them for people that love the comics, but also for the average person.
Yeah.
So, you know, they're making it so that you can go into it cold and still not be completely lost. You could see the Thor movies without seeing the Avengers.
Yep.
Yes.
Which is nice. You know, they've made a standalone universe that is also an inclusive universe, and they've managed to give all their characters depth. I mean, even in Iron Man with Pepper Potts, who is not the most interesting of characters in the comic, they at least round it out.
Mm-hmm.
Who is Pepper Potts played by again?
Terry Crews.
Right.
What? When I saw the first Iron Man, I had never heard of Iron Man.
Wow.
Nope. I didn't know there were comic books of Iron Man.
Nope.
Wow.
And I still really liked it. Like, I didn't even know for a long time that there were comic books. I was like, oh, this is just a one-off.
Well, no, I was not.
Hang on. Let Tuffley defend himself and do so quickly.
I should explain this because I read the X-Men side of the house and not the Avengers side of the house. And therefore, her exposure to comics is basically through my exposure to the X-Men.
Which can be convoluted and confusing as hell.
Yes.
It's funny because we're both now Marvel people mostly, but he reads X-Men and Spider-Man and I read Avengers stuff.
Well, I will say, Rob, I'm just like Kim. I kind of knew there was an Iron Man, but I had no idea of any of it.
Yeah.
And as someone who's been reading comics for a long time, can I just say how happy I am for you guys? Because you guys came in at just like the perfect moment. You will never have to deal with 17-year-old Tony Stark. You'll never have to deal with the Siege Perilous. You'll never have to deal with Wolf Cap. You'll never have to deal.
No. Not unless you read fanfic. Then you might get all.
I'm pretty sure that's a different thing.
But I mean,
I'm not sure what it is, but I'm pretty sure it's different.
Actually, JJ, bought all this trying shit. To redact that.
Yeah, I know. JJ, I'm with you.
Everything that I just mentioned, I've read.
Yeah, that thing where you keep.
Do you remember Onslaught?
Oh, God.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
What's hilarious was, you guys know, and Tuffley, you especially would know this. JJ, you probably know this too. You guys remember that the idea was to eventually fold all of Marvel into Heroes Reborn, right?
Yes. Right.
Yeah, and they did. It was New Coke so bad they pulled back.
And if I recall correctly, it was supposed to be all of the Image artists involved at one point or another.
Yeah,
because they were trying. It was supposed to be McFarlane was going to come in and do Spidey again.
Oh, ooh. So is it? Does anyone know if New 52 has been retracted yet?
It hasn't been, but
But they keep taking New 52ers off as soon as – if they don't – I think their rule is, 4 to 6 issues, and if it's not doing well, they just let it die? So if I mean, they have one of those titles that's not doing well, they're just letting it die.
Well,
so
one of two things happens. Either they let it go 6 months or the creative staff gets pissed off that they changed the direction and they leave.
Yeah.
Well, it seems like every time DC gets something good going,
they piss off the creative team.
Right. Well,
I think what's very interesting is right now, because J.H. Williams is promoting Sandman. And I find it very interesting that in interviews controlled by DC, the topic of Batwoman doesn't come up. The topic of Batwoman doesn't come up, but when he's allowed to do interviews without DC being around, that comes up.
Oh, it comes up all the time now.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure they basically said no questions about Batwoman. Now, here's my question for the two newbie comic readers, Lee and Kim. When you now pick up the comics, do you find that it's close enough to the movies that you can figure out what the hell's going on, or did you have to sort of have a learning curve to get on board?
Well, see, I'm reading Secret Avengers that's the only Marvel I'm reading, although I'm starting to really want to get into She-Hulk. And
you and a lot of fanboys.
Possibly. With the Secret Avengers.
I have the first FF trade for that, Lee.
Yeah. With the Secret. Well, I think that's who, you got me started on it. I think the thing with Secret Avengers is kind of what I'm liking with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which is I wanted to see S.H.I.E.L.D. being spies. And that's what I'm seeing in Secret Avengers. And oh, by the way, some of them are also superheroes or have other powers. Okay. That's great. That just adds to the story. Hi Rob. So that's a part of it.
Please leave your number and I'll call you when I can.
Blah 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 blah. Oh, okay, he doesn't give his number.
At the tone, please record your message.
Hang on.
When you have finished recording, you may hang up or press 1 for more options.
Rob, oh my god, the voices. There's blood everywhere. What are we going to do?
You're going to need a bucket.
And a sponge.
Was that a walrus joke?
And a rock.
I has a bucket.
Bob's got a rock. He got it on Halloween.
But the reason I ask is because I remember when the X-Men movies came out that
I wrote a column about this.
Yeah, I know you did. The books looked nothing like the fucking movie. So you'd have people who had come in off of the movies and gone, who the hell are these people? Who is Maggot?
Marvel did well in that they rebooted a whole bunch of stuff right around the movie. They have the Marvel Now line or whatever. A lot of the stuff that I'm reading is either new issue ones with Marvel Now or their new books. So I'm the only mainline Avengers title I'm reading is Avengers Assemble, which is meant to be friendly to people who are coming from the movies. It's got the same main cast as the people who are in the Avengers film.
Dr. Druid and Gilgamesh.
And then they bring in additional people kind of one at a time so you can get to know them. So they start out. And I'm talking specifically about Kelly Sue's run. I didn't really like the Bendis arc, the first like 10 issues. Like it was okay, but I didn't really love it. But when Kelly Sue started writing it, I really like what she did with it because like there's a 2 or 3 episode arc called Science Bros that's about Tony and Bruce. And then there's like a 1 issue that's Natasha and Clint and Spider-Woman, Jessica. And so it's small, short stories contained in an issue or two that are a subset of the Avengers so that when they're bringing in new characters, you can kind of get used to them and get to know them without having to have like everybody on the scene and then you don't know who it is. I'm reading Avengers Assemble. I'm reading Captain Marvel, which was new. So basically in the first story arc, it lays out everything you need to know about her backstory. I'm reading Young Avengers, which was kind of a reboot, but then I got the two trades of the previous run of Young Avengers, which there weren't all that many of, so that I could catch up. what else am I reading? I keep adding them. Like, I keep seeing new ones that I need to have.
Hawkeye.
You're reading Hawkeye.
Yeah, Hawkeye, which was, again, new. And so, like, I haven't read any of the old stuff. And so sometimes I'll look at, like, the wiki and kind of sum up some, like, I'll see a reference to, like, I read up on the whole House of M thing and who Scarlet Witch was and what her background was because her kids are in Young Avengers and I was trying to figure out what was going on. But apart from that,
she has kids again?
Actually,
okay.
How are they back? Okay.
Don't ask JJ.
But the other thing is,
in reality, okay?
Magic children that she had with the robot guy. I don't really understand it. But
it'll be Coulson. Don't worry.
No, it won't be Coulson. Stop it.
It's so going to be the Vision. It's going to happen.
I don't disagree with that.
The Avengers Assemble special. Like, what are they called? The thick ones? Are they specials?
Wait, JJ, I've got it. Just to fuck with you, he's going to be Machine Man.
Or if he becomes British, he'll become Deathhead.
Or Deathlock.
So.
Win! Win! Toughly for the win!
Thank you.
I
have found it actually very easy to access, and anything that was like a reference that puzzled me, I could usually like Wikipedia it and catch up pretty easily.
You kids with your Wikipedia.
I know, right?
God, you didn't have
I know I speak for JJ and Tuffley, where it was like, until Official Handbook of the Marvel Universe came out, we didn't know what the fuck was happening.
There's a storyline from when I was a kid that there was an issue where every comic that took place in New York, it started snowing, and it said to find out why to get this issue of Thor that I never picked up. I still don't know why it was snowing in all my comics.
Is that the power pack thing? No. This must have been the winter casket thing.
I don't know.
Winters. Hang on. What was that called? Because that actually would be a great story. That was a Simonson story.
Okay.
So with the other thing that they've done.
Hang on. Let me help JJ. The casket of ancient winters, which you saw in the first Thor movie. That's what that was.
Oh.
Yes. The glowing thing that Loki used to like freeze the guards. That's the casket of ancient winters.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And that made it snow everywhere?
Basically,
it got opened, yeah.
Yeah, it got opened in New York and New York basically froze, if I remember correctly. That's Simonson.
Isn't that what makes Jotunheim cold? Or originally
It gave them their power.
Yeah.
In the movie, I don't know about the comic.
Oh, yeah, I don't know
so
about
long.
That. By
although,
the way, I would
although,
like to
I will say that just like with the first Thor, what I would really like, and maybe when they do the Thor double pack bundle, I would just like the ability to overlay Walt Simonson sound effects over the film.
Boom!
Can I ask JJ a question?
Sure.
Are there any more mysteries from your youth that you would like Widge to solve?
You know, my 12-year-old self right now is so happy. I'm so glad I signed on tonight just to know why it was snowing in Spider-Man. You have no idea. It's like a mystery. It's like finding out who your parents are if you're adopted. It's amazing.
Well, just remember, I'm your baby daddy.
And Kim, I will say that if you did want to go back and read House of M, it's safe. It's a really good series.
I read The Children's Crusade because that was a Young Avengers story. Ooh. And man, that made fuck no sense.
Yeah, but House of M is actually self-contained.
Okay.
Unlike, say, Infinity, where I don't know what the fuck's going on.
Oh, I know. There's a bunch of Infinity crossovers in some of the books I read, and I got no clue what's happening.
Yeah.
Like, I was going along in my stories, and all of a sudden they're all in fucking space. Like, what the fuck, crossovers?
House of M has basically like one of my favorite Wolverine moments of all time, one of my favorite Spider-Man moments of all time. It blows my mind when Bendis is on. He is so fucking on. It's ridiculous. It made me so happy. I wish to somewhere in an alternate universe, the original New Avengers that Bendis was writing is still going, and The Avengers is actually still a good comic book.
apparently
Civil War fucking ruined it.
Apparently the Bendis run on the X-Men book that he's doing is apparently really good. Aaron really likes it.
Aaron loves it, yeah.
Yeah.
Can't we just retcon Civil War now?
What was it good for?
I think they're just about done already.
Say it again. Sorry.
Absolute I was saying again.
At least singing Colbert with Captain America's shield, apparently.
Sorry, I can't.
So, Kim, what I would like to challenge you with, if you can come across it sometime. So, way back when, there was Marvel did something called Assistant Editors Month.
Ah!
And everything was absolutely batshit for 1 month. You had a what if Aunt May became a Herald of Galactus.
You had a Marvel team up with the Not Ready for Primetime players from Saturday Night Live.
Oh my God.
Which, yeah, but if you happen to come across...
Wait, is this the one where Sue Storm married Not Reed, somebody else? I forget who it was.
Married Johnny, right?
Married Metal Storm.
Stop Jared that. Finn.
Was this
now you're gonna make me look
nobody?
It up.
Wow.
Was this the assistant editorials thing that that had a chase scene in an X-Men annual that included one in the Marvel offices?
I think so.
Probably, yeah.
Okay.
If you can come across, there was a West Coast Avengers where they were on Late Night with David Letterman. No, it's just the Avengers. It's not West Coast.
Oh, are you sure?
Oh,
because it had Beast in it, so it's not West Coast. I don't think, but it was when Hawkeye was leading the team. And I would like, Kim, just to see, because you know who Hawkeye is now, I would love for you to go back and read the Hawkeye that we all fell in love with and why we are also kind of excited that Hawkeye is cool again.
Hawkeye is awesome.
So is this what from, like, Hawkeye and Mockingbird, or?
This would have been, the story takes place right after... the Hawkeye limited series.
So
sorry, I'm getting an echo
in my. I am familiar with the existence of Hawkeye and Mick. Am I echoing?
No, it won't come through on the mix. Just ignore
okay.
it.
Okay. I'm just, familiar with the existence of Hawkeye and Mockingbird and of Hawkeye Blind Spot. I may have legally acquired those two, but I haven't read them because I wasn't sure if they were going to be good.
What's great,
because
JJ,
the purple suit kind of turns me off.
JJ, the cover has actually Hawkeye with his hand behind his ear, like A, which is what.
Oh yeah, I'm looking at it now.
Yeah.
Oh, is that where he has hearing loss?
Yes.
This is the issue right after the miniseries where he has really bad hearing loss. That's part of why I recommended it, or why I would like to see what happens. If
I
you
love
read
Hawkeye.
It.
Oh, have you guys read Endless Wartime? Have you guys read that?
Yeah.
Good night, Lee.
I actually didn't care for it.
Really?
Really.
I really liked it.
It seemed... Here's what I think the problem was. And I fucking love Warren Ellis like there's no tomorrow. I mean, like ridiculous amounts of love for him.
Yeah, I know. So I thought you'd be really into it.
Well, here's what I think the problem was. I think the problem was Marvel has done a really good job of translating the comic book sensibility and the movie sensibility and marrying the two in a movie form. I don't think it works the other way. And what that graphic novel smelled of to me was, let's take the movie sensibility and translate it into comics and have that same sort of, haha, it's funny. And the pacing doesn't work in a comic. So to me, it just felt awkward and weird. So,
well, I will tell you, here's the thing.
Yeah.
The plot, I was like, yeah, whatever, big boom, bang, kill things.
Yeah.
But I thought the character work was really good. And see, this is the thing, is a lot of times I read the comics a lot more for the character work than for the punching.
My problem wasn't the punching. To be clear, my problem was that, yes, I mean, the characters were good, but it was just like all that banter and stuff would have worked great on screen.
Mm-hmm.
But in a comic, it was just paced wrong.
Oh, see, I liked it. That was my favorite part. Like the whole part at the beginning where they're all coming up and Carol and Cap are bantering back and forth about their various branches of service. And the whole thing where Cap calls Clint, and just that the line where he's like, there was a girl and some guys who hit me, and then now he's in a dumpster. Like, that's so Clint.
Well,
that's like in one line. That is the life of Clint Barton for some reason.
What's
I just
funny,
thought it was really great.
What's funny is that like here, I just pulled up I did a search on it to find some images. Here was one of the things that doesn't work is that you've got when Captain Marvel walks in, they spend three panels with her headgear disappearing with nothing else happening, which would have taken like a split second on screen. Yeah. But in the comic, she should be saying something. Something should be happening because it's like, why that pause would not happen. In real life, that pause would not happen.
No, I get what you're saying.
Long. So there,
oh my
that
gosh,
was,
okay.
A lot of that was through the whole thing for me, and part of the thing may be that you know I'm old, so I've been reading comics since I was like a fetus, to the point where I was selling them at shows and trading them at shows with a table of my own. I had so
aww.
Goddamn many of them. Seriously, that's cheap. So I am steeped in the fucking stuff, which is why it angers me when they're bad, because I know how good they can be. You know, I'm like well, sorry, X-Men, you've had the Dark Phoenix saga. I know you can be better than this. Fuck you.
And let's move past Days of Future Past. Let's stop telling that story.
Yeah. Oh, don't get me started about how mad I am that they made it be Wolverine instead of Kitty. I'm really mad about that.
Well, the whole okay. I mean, we could
like,
go back.
Why
to the
does
first
fucking
film.
Wolverine have to do everything? Give him a pass.
Wolverine.
I'm not even talking about the movie. I'm talking about the comics.
I know.
Anytime they still can't get past the whole concept of alternate timelines. But yes, you are correct.
But see,
Wolverine should be Kitty, and especially when you got Ellen Page. But
yeah, but
exactly.
JJ, to be fair, some of if you do the alternate timeline right, like House of M for me. Rocks balls. I love alternate timelines that are in continuity where then the characters have to figure out a decent way of getting back to where they started, you know?
Well, original Age of Apocalypse is also really fun.
Yes. That sucked me back into... I was out.
Especially, like, Warren's run on Excalibur was really good.
Oh, shit. Generation Next.
Yeah.
Where the way that ended, you're like, holy fuck!
Or there was a run in Uncanny back when Romita was still drawing it, where I can't remember the name of the sorcerer. Yeah, that sent them back to the medieval ages with Spider-Man.
No, not even that. He turned the New York of present day to the medieval ages.
To medieval.
Yes.
And wait, isn't that what Q does in Star Trek The Next Generation?
Yes.
Kind of, but this was more brutal. But there was a field around Manhattan, and when you walked into it, you forgot who you were, and you became an analog of yourself in the medieval weirdness, and the only person who remembered was Spider-Man. And no one could understand what he was saying because he was speaking modern English, and it was done in brackets to show that it was in a foreign language.
Okay, that's pretty great.
That was a two-parter. That was a great two-parter. So Jay, like, to me, those kick ass. Like, Age of Ultron does not. It sucks ass because it's a badly executed alternate universe thing. I love them when they're done right. I fucking love those things.
Oh, so all the Age of Ultron stuff was an alternate universe?
Well, alternate in continuity, in that they changed time and then brought time back.
Oh, so it's like the year that never happened on Doctor Who?
Yes, but like I said, done correctly, it's awesome, especially when, you know, especially when you remember bits of it, like some of the people in House of M, where you're just like, that's fucking
awesome. I only
read
like the two crossover episodes that were Avengers Assemble Age of Ultron, so I had no clue it was happening.
Okay, so basically instead of Martha walking the Earth for a year, it was Wolverine walking the time stream.
Okay.
Which that was one of the few parts of that was good.
So, you guys, I was trying to Google for that thing I had heard about where Sue Storm married someone else, which, seriously, she should have because Reed Richards is a dick. But I found this thing called What If from 1982.
Yeah,
which one? And I was seeing the table of contents, and it's very funny. Like,
what if World War II was fought in space?
What if the Fantastic Four were bananas? What if were Peter Parker's uncle? What if Don Blake and Tony Stark were brothers? What if Aunt May were Ant-Man? What if Spider-Man married Spider-Woman?
No.
What if Reed Richards took Postman Willie Lumpkin up on his offer to join the Fantastic Four?
Now, you remember, JJ, when they did the run of them that was actually serious? What was like, yeah, like what, yep. what if Storm became Queen of the Vampires from that Dracula run? Stuff like that that was actually cool, which is why I fucking loved Exiles when it was decent.
Yeah.
Oh, the one with what if Jean lived?
Oh, God.
That might be this one. It says, what if Phoenix still lived?
Yeah.
What if Dazzler had been a stand-up comedian instead of a singer?
Well,
they've done a couple of variations on what if.
Yeah, they have. There was a fucking good. Well, they also had Phoenix, the Untold Story, which was the one-shot, which had what Byrne originally wanted to do, because he originally wanted her to be just depowered.
Yeah.
He didn't want her killed. And I think, what was it? Was it Shooter at that point?
Yes.
Yeah, it was Shooter.
Shooter was like, killer. You got to kill her. And
Shooter,
and,
who might be a jerk, but who had really good ideas what to do with comics.
Yeah, no, he really did. Shit. I don't miss Valiant.
And to his Marvel credit, comics? Wasn't it his suggestion to then bring her back for X-Factor?
Yeah.
Yeah, although, wasn't it Kurt Busiek who came up with the idea for Hal?
There's a long, convoluted story. Apparently, 50 people in Marvel had that idea at about exactly the same point.
And can I just say...
Because John Byrne swears he wrote it for Fantastic Four, but...
Well, here's my thing, is that just like you wish they could get past Days of Future Past, I think introducing the Phoenix Force as its own thing is like the biggest X-Men crutch of all time.
Well, yeah.
Can the Phoenix Force just please go away?
Now, you did say something a couple minutes ago, Kim, that let me know that you are hardwired to be a comic fan, whether you realized it or not, because we all prefer the issues where they don't fight so much. If you ask any comic fan what their favorite moments are, it's always a conversation between this person and that person.
Right.
Yeah. I remember... Like one of the coolest things I read, because I was always a big Spider-Man fan, again, going way back, it was one of the times when they were doing one of their major lineup changes and Thor went to Spider-Man and Thor was the one who asked him to try to become an Avenger. And I was like, fuck yeah, this is why I read comics.
Well, now, to me, again, my two favorite things about New Avengers were how you get Spider-Man on the team and Wolverine on the team. Wolverine on the team when nobody fucking wants Wolverine on the team, and yet it works.
Mm-hmm.
And they got Bendis got Spider-Man on the team with one line. And I was like, holy shit. I just read that. That was amazing.
Yeah.
So to me it's always the setup rather than the fights. It's always the interesting, convoluted stuff rather than the fights.
Well, and just what it's like to be, all genre stuff is always, I mean, it's never really about the superheroes in the space. It's always about, you know, real life stuff.
Well, especially Marvel.
Yeah, especially with Marvel. And it's really interesting to see some of the themes and the way they explore it. Like, and I really like seeing... One of my favorite things I've found, and I've been talking about liking this in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. when they've been doing it on the TV show. I like it when a story with an ensemble will take the like twos and threes and kind of separate them out and play with the dynamics of those people together.
Right.
You know, so you can get the sort of different sides of the characters when they're with different people. Like you see Hawkeye in the Avengers books, and then you see Hawkeye in Hawkeye when he's on his downtime. And like there's this one part in the issue of Hawkeye where he can't figure out how to make his DVR work and he calls Tony Stark to come help him fix it. And Tony's like, this is a piece of shit. Why don't you just let me buy you a new one? And he's like, because I want this one. This is mine.
Well, and here's what's interesting. I was just thinking about fights that I actually really enjoyed. The fights I really enjoy are the ones that I've never seen before. Because superhero fights, mostly it's all been done, right?
Right.
But it's only when you get into something like the bit in The Authority where the rogue doctor gets his powers back, and because, and this is the doctor of the Wildstorm universe, where he's basically simpatico with the Earth. So they evacuate the planet and have a planet-wide fight between the Authority and this guy who is rapidly gaining all power. He's rapidly becoming omnipotent. Sorry, I learned to speak the wrong way. But that was badass.
That's a good point. I will say one of the things that I've really liked about the Phase 2 Marvel films is that so far, I mean, it's only been two so far, but they have done a good job at having different and interesting action sequences.
Yes.
Like in Iron Man 3, there was all the stuff where he didn't have the suit. There was the thing where he was driving the suit with remote control. There was the falling sequence. There was the sequence where he was only partially dressed and he had to like one shoe and one gauntlet. And that all made it interesting because it wasn't just another Iron Man in the suit fight thing. Sequence was different.
Exactly.
And in Thor, not to be spoilery, but in the big final thing with Thor, because they have anomalies going on, that also was very fresh to me. And so I'll say, of the books that I'm currently reading, even though in Captain Marvel there's a scene where Captain Marvel punches a Tyrannosaurus Rex in a subway and it's completely freaking awesome. I mean, come on.
That's somebody trying to one-up Punisher punching a polar bear.
It's so great. But the two books that I think consistently have fight scenes that I enjoy are Hawkeye and Young Avengers. And I don't know if it's something about just the creative team that's working or if it's about the artists, but I find that both of those books have interesting fight scenes. Like in Hawkeye, they really do a nice job at using the arrows and the archery in creative ways. And actually paying stuff off in the action that they've established earlier.
Right.
Like in, I think, the second issue where they have the conversation about shooting multiple arrows at a time, you know, and then that comes to be a big climactic scene. Like there's the scene where Clint has Kate slung over his shoulder and he's running away from the bad guys and she shoots four arrows at a time and shoots out two bad guys' eyes out.
Ew.
It's awesome, though. Because she's like been shot in the leg or something. And so he's carrying her away while she's shooting over his shoulder, you know, for the pursuing bad guys. It's just great. And then in Young Avengers, they do a lot of really interesting things with like panel shape and like in the page, in like the two page spreads they play around a lot. I don't know if you're reading Young Avengers, but they're the current.
I don't read Marvel. I break out in hives.
The current big bad in Young Avengers is like it's from a different dimension, I think. And part the mother is from a different dimension and has impact and has influence over dimensions. And so one of the things that they play with is the idea of her trapping them in pocket dimensions, and the pocket dimensions are the panels in the book. So when they're escaping, they're actually breaking out of the panels. And it's really cool. I love Gillen. I think he's really good.
It's McKelvey and Gillen, and that's the same bit they did on Phonogram.
And I loved Phonogram, so it makes sense that but I'm really enjoying, not just from a story perspective, but also just from structurally how they're doing action in that book. It's interesting. And you can kind of go back and look at it after you've read through it to get to the story and find out what happens. You can go back and kind of appreciate, you know, the details they put in and the little touches, and it's a lot of fun.
Because if you go back and look at Rue Britannia, they do a lot of playing around with space.
Yeah, I need to reread Phonogram now that I'm more into comics, because I bet I'll pick up on stuff that I didn't pick up on before.
Less so in the Record Club, but in Rue Britannia, I know they played around a lot. They did a lot of that playing around with space and spacing.
There's something very meta about a lot of the layouts that they use, and I really like
it. Yeah.
Because also they have America, who basically stomps portals into existence so that they can go from dimension to dimension. She's awesome. I love her.
Comics.
Although I will say, the best alternate universe in continuity thing I've probably ever read is JLA Rock of Ages by Grant Morrison. It is probably still one of my favorite story arcs of all fucking time. because
I'm not even a DC person, but I'll agree with that. Yeah.
Well, yeah, JLA was fantastic all the way through almost the end of Wade, but that penultimate story arc that he did literally I think it was 5 or 6 issues, but whatever the second to last issue was, I got to the end of it, and Tuff Lee probably did this too. How the fuck is he going to resolve this in the next issue? The fuck? There is no fucking way. And he did it, and it was fucking brilliant.
I have to say, I was even with Morrison through most of the X-Men run until that the second, the last two story arcs of his, you just kind of lost it.
No, he really did.
X-Men was really good.
No, it was. I mean, the whole concept of Wild Sentinels who are rogue, and they're basically peeling bits off the Blackbird and putting them onto their body as they go.
Yeah.
I was like, that is brilliant.
Weapon 10.
I gotta read that run eventually.
You what?
Weapon 10.
Oh yeah, Weapon 10. Which, oh my god, I am so pissed off. They didn't play around with that like they should have.
They never did anything with that.
Oh my god, that pissed me off.
They kept Animex around for so long.
Oh god.
But they never did anything with that.
Did they ever do anything with, like, Weapon 1, 2, 3, 4? Did they ever do anything like what we had talked about?
I dropped out of X-Men, like, right after the Morrison run.
Because that was... Because the concept was that Wolverine was Weapon 10. It wasn't X, it was 10. And so my thought was, what if he decided to go back and find out who the other weapons were, and one of them's a Hulk, and one of them's Captain America?
Where it's
like, because I think they had played with that a little bit in the Deadpool book where they had mentioned that a couple of times. But I think Deadpool was about as far as it ever got.
But I loved – well, I mean, Wolverine, no one's – seldom does anyone use Wolverine to his full potential anyway, a.k.a. Bone Claws.
Men who mope with bears.
Fucking Bone Claws. Anyway. I'm sorry. The one bit that they had without his adamantium in, I remember he got run over by a car, and 4 seconds later he was up and moving again because his healing factor without the adamantium in is that fucking good.
Yeah,
and used I was to like, be.
What's that?
Didn't used to be. I remember the old days when he would get messed up, but he'd be hurt for months.
Well, but
you know, Mutant Masker. Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. He's
laid up forever.
Yeah. Oh, there was the back-to-back. There was Mutant Massacre, and then that big throwdown he had with Sabretooth.
Yeah.
And then for months, nothing.
Well, but see...
And that was the reason, like, for 4 months, they had that storyline afterwards where it was just Storm.
Yeah, because you had a kitty that wasn't tangible. You had a paralyzed Colossus.
Right.
I forget what was wrong with Nightcrawler. He got all messed up, too.
He teleported at the wrong moment and got starred.
Yeah, that's right. And then you had so everybody was all messed up, and
that's for some reason how they ended up with Longshot on the team. I don't quite get that, but there you go.
I have a soft spot for Longshot because I have a soft spot for Arthur Adams.
I know, and they're bringing him back. Yeah. I think they're supposed to be doing a big thing with Longshot.
Well, my whole thing with Wolverine and the Bone Claws was, rather than give him the Bone Claws, which doesn't make any fucking sense at all, give him no claws. How awesome to see is Wolverine? He got the claws at some point, which is before they retconned the Bone Claws in. He was just Logan, right? So how awesome to see Logan in the present day? How does he function without the claws? When he's basically can't. He can't be killed, but he can't just carve people up anymore. Let's see him use his brain a bit, or a samurai sword, or fucking anything other than fucking Bone Claws.
There was a storyline where he was in Genosha.
Also, bones aren't that sharp.
Well,
exactly. They just break all the fucking time. Exactly, Kim. How Bone Claws fucking cut things only when the plot calls for it. Otherwise, they fucking break. Fucking Bone Claws, Kim. Fucking Bone Claws.
It's war. I'm not fucking kidding.
You got it, Neil.
For the story where they were in Genosha, they went the exact opposite way, which I kind of liked. It was the fact that they put an inhibitor collar on it, which destroyed his healing factor. But it also meant that he couldn't get any white blood cells from his bones because his bones were covered in metal.
Oh.
So he was dying of poisoning.
Yes. Nice. And when he popped his claws, they just bled like a motherfucker.
Nice.
And then for some reason Rogue blanked out and Carol took over or something like that, if I remember that story correctly. Yeah.
We won't go there. I won't go there.
Okay. Never mind. I'm sorry.
I'm a comics fan. I remember the good stuff.
Because, see, I remember it's all tangled up because I remember the bit with Wolverine, which I thought was really cool. But then you've got the whole Rogue Carol thing and then Inferno kind of in the background that was coming up. So,
well, but
Inferno, sorry.
See, here's what's great, though, is because Marvel has this huge legacy that they can just cherry pick the cool shit. So, so I don't know about you, but the movies to me are like, a smoothie of all the cool shit.
It's like, let's just conveniently forget all the stuff that sucked. That never happened in the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
That would be the 90s.
So I've heard.
Yep.
Most of the 90s, yeah.
Yep.
As soon as they make a movie starring Cable when he has no feet and nothing but shoulders, then we know that the movies are over.
Oh, wait a minute. Isn't Bishop in Days of Future Past now?
Yeah, but that doesn't count. That's not the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Yeah.
No, it's a different cinematic.
No. Oh, yeah. Right. It's the Fox shitty cinematic universe. Okay.
Well, However, First Class was really good.
First Class was really good, but now they're going to fuck it up, so.
I know. And
They might not.
No, it's Bryan Singer, the man who brought you X-Men. I mean, he fucked up X-Men.
He also brought you Superman Returns, so think about that.
I haven't seen Superman Returns, and I only saw like the first two X-Men.
Bullet, Eyeball. I don't think you really need to see anything else.
Don't know. You're good.
Imagine everything you like about Superman, only with 100% more deadbeat dad
and Kevin Spacey.
And as for X3, the film that you didn't see, think about everything that you love about the X-Men. And then forget all of it, and instead, you know what? It's the opposite. It's the mirror universe of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. They took all the shit and like distilled it into one film.
Well, and what's really frustrating about that? Because Aaron and I did a drive-in of Doom on this one, so we watched the film.
Yes,
and
I've heard that. Very, very good, guys.
Where could you find the drive-in of Doom?
On the website of Doom.
The website of Doom.
Do you also have the Pantry of Doom? Is there?
Yes.
Is there like the billiard room of doom?
But what we discovered with X-Men 3...
The Dome of Doom.
Is that we do have the Legion of Doom.
Okay, well, that's good.
But we found that the thing about that film that is the most frustrating is that the first hour of that movie sets up such potential. When you watch X-Men 3 and you see Angel cutting off his own wings and crying, you feel for that kid so much. But why is Angel in the film? Because the second half of the film does nothing but shit on the first half of the film. I mean, there's actually a moment of demarcation if you're watching that film and you're honest about it. You're like, okay, it's cool. And then about a half hour in, you're like, well, this is less cool. And then at an hour mark, exactly an hour, the movie turns to shit.
I've got a question for you. Were you actually talking about the Road Warriors or the Legion of Dooms from DC Comics?
Do they live in Darth Vader's head in a swamp?
That's exactly where I was going.
Awesome. All right, so we should probably interrupt this comic geekorama.
I mean, I'm not misremembering that, right? The Road Warriors were also called the Legion of Doom, correct?
Yes.
Hence the laughter.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure my wrestling days, I haven't completely forgotten them.
Is that the Ridley Scott sequel to Road Warrior?
Yes.
Okay.
With Hawk and, who's the other guy? Hawk and,
Animal. Actually,
Animal, thank you. Scott?
No, it'd be James Cameron, you're right.
James Cameron.
You're right.
Wasn't there,
they, the same joke at the same time.
They eventually replaced one of those guys, didn't they? At one point?
Yeah, they were gonna have Heath Ledger replace Mad Max, but, No, they were!
Too soon?
They no, were! It wasn't a joke! It's not a joke! It's history! Fury Road! That's what was going to happen!
Yes, that was supposed to happen.
Good God. Anyway. He
just didn't fit into the shoulder pads. Go on!
What? We should... that's right. It's Tom Hardy now. Okay, I'm fine with that. Yes. So we should mosey towards recommendations. We won't do introductions. We don't have time. We don't have time. Everyone knows who we are.
Oh, shit. We did forget introductions.
Oh, wow.
Of course
Fuck
we did.
You, Fletch. We'll get to you next time.
Oh, hey.
Oh, shit.
Be nice. They actually gave us permission to use the song. All right. So who wants to go first?
I'll go.
Go, Tuffley.
Right, hold on a second. Before you start, I would argue that they probably should have listened first. I guess it's their mistake.
They didn't, and 205 episodes later, it's too fucking late. So,
go sorry, Tuffley.
Okay, so if you're kind of an obsessive Beatles person, you may already have this stuff, but they released a second volume of Live at the BBC. And it's really nice. It's now I will say they've moved the timeline's about the same as the first volume, so you get there's a little bit of confusion over which bits go with which shows because the liner notes go chronological with this, but the recordings actually aren't. But otherwise, if you don't really care about that sort of thing, it's a lot of really early, really good live Beatles stuff. Which has actually been cleaned up. The sound's been cleaned up quite a bit. So if you have the bootlegs, it actually sounds a bit better. Or at least I think. So Beatles Live at the BBC Volume 2. It's a 2-disc set. If you download it, then no discs, but you need that. And the other thing that I was going to recommend this week, music-wise, going back to the vault again, is the reissue of Tommy. Which they also threw out this week. Everybody's hitting the back catalog now. But the reissue of Tommy is really good. Super Mondo expanded version. Dear God, can there be anything left in the vaults attached to Tommy? I don't think so, but you can check that out. I was going to say, yes, on iTunes, if you're looking to pre-order the Doctor Who 50th anniversary episode, I think the only way you can do it is in a set that they've got out now that's on iTunes that will include the Adventure in Space and Time movie, the 50th anniversary special. I think the Brian Cox Science of Doctor Who special, I think, and some of the Doctor's Revisited specials and a couple of other smaller items. I believe it's $29.99 for HD, $19 for standard definition. So if you don't really care that much about the HD, save $10 and you get a whole lot of stuff. But I believe that I have not seen that the episode is going to be available on iTunes any other way by itself yet, which might suck, but, for what it comes with, especially for just the episode. And if it does have the Brian Cox thing and the Adventure in Space and Time thing, that is pretty much paying for it. So there you go. And I'm done.
All right. Thank you, Tuffley. Who's next? Go, Kim!
Okay, I can go. I have a bunch of stuff. So first off, in the game lands, since we've been spending almost the whole time talking about Marvel, I think Mike probably recommended it on my behalf, but I want to officially recommend... what's it called? Lego Marvel Superheroes? Like the Lego Marvel game that just came out like a week ago. It's really, really, really fun.
My son saw you online playing it. He popped up on my the thing. And he goes, she's playing Lego Marvel. And he's like, I want to play Lego Marvel. I said, soon. Soon.
It is very good. It's really fun. I will say, I actually play most of the Lego games because I just think they're a lot of fun. For me, Lego games are really fun when I don't want to get really into something. I just want to pop on, play for a little while, and then go back off again. So of all the ones I've played, and I've played all of them except for the second Batman one, I think. All the ones I played, I think this one is the one that immediately I had the most fun with, partially because I love the Marvel characters, but also because I feel like you get the most differentiation between your different powers. Like, it feels really different to play as Iron Man than it does to play as Hulk. And they've done a really good job at giving you sort of the feeling of being the characters. especially the ones that can fly. Those ones are really fun because they will let you just go up and up and up and up above Lego New York and fly around and have a grand old time.
And they started to do that with that second Batman.
Yeah.
And that's where they started to separate those themselves away from what they used to all mm-hmm. how, what all the Lego things used to be. So yeah, we have the second Batman.
You know what I would really like to this is the Lego game I would actually play is Lego Marvel Secret Wars. And then what happens is the war world, instead of being bits from all these other alien worlds, it's all of the Lego sets that you could create. Oh, here's the dungeon set, and here is the forest set, and here's the whatever set. Basically, all of the sets that they have in the Lego museum put on one world, and then the Marvel characters fight in them. Make it happen.
Can we get Jerry Curl Beyonder?
Oh, yeah, because you would have the Lego face and just the painted on curls at the top. And then
the jumpsuit?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, because technically he wasn't around until Secret Wars 2, so I didn't know how canon you were being.
Oh, no. Well, you could have him... He's like an unlockable character or something, because really, who wants to go to Secret Wars 2?
So, well, you always say he's Prince.
Wasn't he?
Did you know that Prince was supposed to be in The Fifth Element?
What?
What?
Originally.
Yes, it was actually supposed to be him instead of
Chris Tucker.
Prince
was originally supposed to play the role that Chris Tucker played in the final thing.
Holy shit.
And Julia Roberts was supposed to play the part that Mila Jovovich played.
Holy shit.
And who was supposed to be in the Bruce Willis role? I forget. It was some...
Tom Cruise.
Isn't it always supposed to be Bruce Willis?
No, it was... The main three people were originally going to be somebody else. And then Prince didn't like the Gautier designs, and he backed out of the project.
Oh, wasn't
and
so it they Stallone? Like,
and so it may have been. It was somebody weird.
Yeah.
Wow.
And then they had to kind of retool the whole thing and recast a bunch of pieces, and then we got the Fifth Element that we all know and love.
I think
so. Yeah, you talked about Prince, and I had read that recently. So
actually, wow. They pitched it. If I read that right, if I read something right, I think they pitched it to Stallone, and I think they pitched it to like Mel Gibson.
Oh yeah, no, it was. It was Mel Gibson. It was supposed to be Mel Gibson, Julia Roberts, and Prince.
Can I just say that Prince, Julia Roberts, Stallone, Fifth Element is probably the only Hollywood that didn't happen weirder than that. Is the Salvador Dali inspired Dune that was supposed to have Dali as the emperor and was over budget, I think, before they got done with the design phase.
Wow.
Yeah. I actually did a post about it because somebody posted the some of the costume designs that were done for the film, which were amazing.
Well, you know, apparently, album covers.
Apparently, Gautier has said later that he was talking about the costume designs with Prince, and he was trying to say fuku, which is like fake ass, like there was going to be butt padding in the costume, and Prince thought he was saying fuck you and got offended.
Oh, right. So, yes, it was... let's see. The director was Alejandro, and I'm going to say this name completely wrong, Jodorowsky, crazy art director guy, who basically was talking to Peter Gabriel and Pink Floyd for the music, had Giger and Mobius on hand for set and character design. Dan O'Bannon was doing special effects. Dali was going to play the Emperor, and he was also apparently talking to Orson Welles and Gloria Swanson.
Oh, my gosh. That's like something you would dream up in a hallucinogenic
case. Oh, God. It's oh.
Wow. Well, you're forgetting the special appearance by Up With People.
Now, Grant, I hadn't heard the Orson Welles and Gloria Swanson bit, but that did come from Wikipedia, which is always right. So,
wow.
Yep. Anyway.
So, yes, sorry, Marvel Lego. Also, Assassin's Creed 4 has come out. It's the pirate one. And I will say that it is about 500 times funner than Assassin's Creed 3. Like, it's somebody over at Ubisoft's multicultural team of various faiths and beliefs. Have y'all played Assassin's Creed?
Yes.
The beginning of every single game, they have this disclaimer that says this game was made by a multicultural team of various faiths and beliefs. I guess because they're...
Because I guess because they have the whole thing where you have to assassinate the Pope and all that, like they're trying to not offend people.
And it's about the, you know, it's about a, what the hell are they called?
The Templar?
Templars. Yeah. Templars, there's a lot of religious overtones and
yeah. So it's actually really fun. And now just we make a big joke about that because it's just so funny. But apparently somebody in that team has figured out that the games had stopped being very fun. Because you spent too much time like running your tower mini game and balancing your checkbook and stuff, and not enough time stabbing people in the face, which is what it's for.
Now, what if you stabbed people with your checkbook? Would that be okay?
Also that the main character in the third game wasn't very interesting. But
what was
his dad? His dad was awesome,
more interesting than he was. So in the fourth game. And another thing that they've done in Assassin's Creed, they started doing this in the Vita game, which I really liked. They have now moved away from your Desmond Miles, the boringest man on Earth, living the memories of his much more interesting ancestors. And now they've developed the technology such that anybody can relive the different memories if they have a DNA sample or whatever. So now what they have framed it as is that Abstergo, which is the big bad in the game, it's basically the Templars have now become a multinational corporation. They now have an entertainment arm and they use the Animus technology to make video games. And so the framing of this story is that you are a new employee to Abstergo Entertainment, and you're supposed to be researching this guy's life so that you can make a video game about him. And so
it's published by?
And yes, in the actual credits, it gives an Abstergo Industries bump in the credits. And the game is eventually going to be published by Ubisoft. And you're at this thing in Montreal. So they have this kind of fourth wall meta tongue-in-cheek thing about the framing story that actually works really well. That's got a real sense of humor to it. And when you're reading like the codex where you find information, you have all the different editors are like passive aggressively sniping back and forth in the notes. Like there's one guy who is really a stickler for being historically accurate. And there are other people who are like, no, this is really interesting and people are going to want to climb it. We have to put it in. And he's like, no, it wasn't built until 1793. We can't put it in. And so it's actually very clever the way they've implemented it. They've made a lot of sort of incremental improvements on some of the core mechanics that are just a little better than they have been before. So the gameplay plays really well. But most of all, it's just fun to be this pirate and run around and stab people and sail and plunder ships and do all this. It's fun. The games are fun. And while there are side quests, there's not so many that you just get bored of it and leave halfway through, at least so far. And also you're in the Caribbean, so it's a different setting. And it's visually a lot more interesting than the setting for 3, which was basically a shit ton of trees. And it was all kind of gray-brown. So, you know, you get to see, you know, palm trees, and you get to go to Havana, you get to go to Nassau. It's a lot of fun. So that's a recommendation. I have a music recommendation. I have of late become extremely enamored of Postmodern Jukebox, who some of you probably are familiar with. You can see them on YouTube. They make a bunch of videos. Basically, their shtick is they take modern songs and they cover them in old styles of music. So they do like ragtime or jazz or doo-wop covers of various stuff. And I found out, you may remember when I talked about Bioshock Infinite, how much I loved the retro covers style music that was in it, like the ragtime piano version of Tainted Love. Come to find out, the guy who is the kind of the brain behind Postmodern Jukebox is in fact the guy who did the ragtime piano Tainted Love for Bioshock Infinite. So you can buy his stuff on iTunes and on Bandcamp. I've basically bought everything he has available for sale, and I'm listening to it like crazy, and I love it. Like, I would good starting points. I would actually recommend their EP, A Motown Tribute to Nickelback, which is no lie, genuinely, unironically, really good. Like, apparently,
kind of genius.
It's genius because he basically does you know, 6 or 7 Nickelback covers as though they were Motown. And they're really good that way. Like, you know, come to find out, when you don't have the same musical track underneath every single song, you can actually have some music there. They have a jazz cover of they have the kind of a doo-wop cover of Miley Cyrus's We Can't Stop that's really, really good. They have a jazz version of Thrift Shop that's really, really good. Just the crazy things, it seems almost like the worse the original song is, the better their version of it becomes. And I'm really, 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 really digging them. So check it out. You won't be sorry. Or if you will be, I just don't know what to do with you, because who doesn't love Ragtime Piano? Nobody, because it's awesome. Anyway, so that's it for me. Also, yay comics, but I've talked about all the ones that I'm reading now, so you can read them.
Oh, and Kim?
Yes, that's it.
Kim, if you enjoy that sort of thing, I would recommend you.
Sorry.
I would recommend that you seek out the band Big Daddy, who did some very excellent covers of things like a jazzy version of Money for Nothing, I'll find it in a second. Anyway, I will look while JJ is providing us with his recommendations.
Yeah. Oh, okay. And the other thing he does, real quick before I, is he also does piano only mashups. And so some of his stuff is that. And those are also really entertaining because he'll take various songs and put them together. Like he has Call Me Al Maybe and Bohemian Rhapsody in Blue.
Nice.
And Lithium versus Titanium. Like he does stuff like that. And it's actually really fun. Or he'll take, you know, 4 different songs that all have New York in the title and sort of mash them up together. It's very clever. And the thing that makes it work is that everyone involved is genuinely extremely musically talented. And the stuff he's doing with the arrangements is actually musically quite sophisticated. So it's really, it's interesting as a music nerd. And it's also, they're just good songs when you hear them. So find it and have fun. And now JJ, have your turn. Sorry.
I'm no worried about it. Okay, so the first thing I'm going to recommend, because we were talking comics, and I was curious to see if this existed, and apparently it does, or at least it will, April of next year. So I'm giving you guys a heads up. There's a Roger Stern omnibus of Spider-Man coming out, and that's just when I started reading. So I have a very soft spot for it. It's when Spider-Man, Roger Stern kind of really kind of understood Spider-Man for me. There's a great issue where he's running and running and running for the Juggernaut and then finally realizes that he just has to stand his ground. There's this great story in here that they mentioned that's the kid who collects Spider-Man, which is a legendary story. If you were a Spider-Man fan of the time, Peter Parker comes to help a kid who reminds him a lot of himself. And it's also where they introduced the mystery of the Hobgoblin, which was fun for a while and then got real dumb. But anyway, it's a cool era for Spider-Man. It's back before, in my opinion, McFarlane got a hold of it and messed everything all up. It was just simply a story of a guy trying to come into his own. And it was a very pure period. I liked it a lot. Also, to stay in comics, my girlfriend was lovely enough to just yesterday actually give me Volume 2 of Saga. I know it's been recommended on here before, but ooh, if you haven't picked up Saga, you're missing out on something amazing. I haven't had a chance to fully sit down with it yet, because it's one of those that I absolutely refuse to tear through. It's just so much fun to read. And the last thing I will recommend is, just because I have been in a classic movie sort of feel lately, and I just recently rewatched Treasure of the Sierra Madre. Nice. And I love Bogey. And it's just one of those things that sometimes you watch a film and you see somebody in a role that only they could play, and it's just so much fun to just kick back and watch Bogey go crazy from the heat. and you got Bogey and Walter Houston just taking turns chewing on scenery and just, I don't know. It's a great film. And there's a lot of, if you're a cartoon fan, there's a lot of lines that come out of this that have been, you know, become cultural cliches in the millions of years since the movie came out. But anyway, if you haven't seen it, definitely it's a high recommendation. You can't really call yourself a film buff if you don't fill in this area. And I pass it along.
Cool. Thank you, JJ. All right, John, what have you got?
Here's a little bit of that Once in a Lifetime. Oh, I forgot to unmute it. And it would move. This thing won't move. The volume control won't move. Why won't you move?
Because it only works once in a lifetime.
Hey!
All right. Well, back to the Motown tribute to Nickelback. That also won't let the volume move. There we go.
World. I'll have to seek that out.
Anyway, what I actually suggest is Battlefield 4. That's right. Battlefield 4. I know a lot of people play Call of Duty, and I'm just not into run and gun. I'm more into it's a little more strategical in the Battlefield games than it is in Call of Duty games. And I've been playing that a lot. If you're playing and you want to, play along with me, you can check me out on my Xbox gamer tag is The Unique Geek. So that works out well for everyone. That's it. And actually, you know what? When I went and bought, I pre-ordered Battlefield 4. And how I did that is I went to needcoffee.com/ajungle. And it got me to amazon.com.
And it did it welcome you to that jungle?
Yes, it did. And in fact, I knew where I was.
Oh, that's...
And so you know, we have new consoles that are coming out with when we're in the off time. So yeah, you could get those through there too.
So, needcoffee.com/jungle.
Actually,
go there.
It's needcoffee.com/Amazon.
Oh.
Yes. If you went through a jungle, I don't know, maybe you had the fever. I don't know. But yes, if you go to needcoffee.com/Amazon, Tuffley is absolutely right. John is absolutely right. Everyone is absolutely right. In that
right, go to needcoffee.com/jungle.
Oh, for God's sake. Basically, we're coming up to that time of year when everyone's going to be shopping on Amazon because you are all wise people. Why the hell would you go out to malls and stuff like that? You all are smarter than that, I know, because our readers are very astute, geeky-type people who want to save their time and energy for games and comics and shit like that rather than shopping. So, if you go to needcoffee.com/Amazon, you can avoid all of that. And it's just like you've gone to the front page of Amazon. You're buying it anyway, and we get kickbacks. It really does help more than you know. So, two quick recommendations for me. Apart from that album with Once in a Lifetime on it is called Cutting Their Own Groove by Big Daddy.
Their volume controls don't work.
Well, your volume controls will probably work. As opposed to John's, and I think he's hallucinating.
Your volume controls may vary.
We control the volume. We control the balance. Also, I want to recommend two bits of music. First of all, Idris Elba presents Luther, the songs and score from series 1, 2, and 3. So it's all the music that you loved from the series and the score as well. So awesome. Throw as much money into that series as you possibly can because I want my Alice spinoff. God damn it.
Well, you're already getting the movie, which is the prequel.
Which means no Alice. So I want Alice. I want,
but you're going to get Alice. That's why they're not doing that.
Are you talking about Once Upon a Time now? I'm confused.
We're talking about Alice doesn't live here anymore. Anyway,
also, I was going to mention
you wouldn't really want Alice to live there.
Actually, we're talking about Bob and Ted and Carol and Alice, John.
Actually, since you brought up Idris Elba, I think isn't he on like the next Damon Albarn album?
Is he?
Yeah.
Has he put out a full album yet?
I believe he has one, but I don't know how you would acquire that. I know he's working on another one.
Yeah, I'll have to find that. Also, I would recommend, it just came out this time last week, Tiny Tempa, who is a hip-hop rap artist from the UK. I first ran into him on Labyrinth's Electronic Earth, I think was the album, Earthquake. Now, there are two versions of that song. One had Busta Rhymes on it, which was really excellent, but Tiny Tempa was on the original, and you can see him on the Live Lounge version of that, which is actually really cool. But yeah, he's got an entire album out called Demonstration, and it's actually really solid.
Was that the one that was out last year?
I don't think so. I think this is the new one. I'm wondering, because see, here's what's confusing, is that apparently, and I'm sure you've seen this.
Is that the one Passout's on?
Hang on, I'm looking. Part of the problem is that, let's see, Tiny Tempa
UK stuff gets released a year late here. Noise Ad's still not out yet.
No, hang on. See, part of the problem is that now people are releasing mixtapes that are sort of like works in progress, which is sort of cool, but it gets sort of confusing. Pass Out was on Discovery, which is actually from 2009.
Okay.
So that's how long it was delayed to get over here. This is brand new. It just came out this past week.
Okay. Good.
Yeah, no, it's good. If you want to check out one of my favorites, if you want to sample it, go look for 5 minutes. If you want to Google it, use the numeral 5, because there's a BBC show called 5 Minutes. So you get 5 minutes with everybody, including Tiny Tempa, but not the fucking song 5 Minutes. So look for numeral 5 Minutes and check it out and see if you enjoy it. If you enjoy that, the album is more of the same and more interesting. So there you go. Well, that brings us to the end of another episode of Weekend Justice. Our 205th episode, and as we look over the wreck of not only the past 3 hours, but our lives, I think we should take a moment and look around us and say, as we always do at this time, Terry Crews.
That's good shit.
Yes, he is. You thought I was going to say Gwyneth Paltrow, but I faked you out.
Oh, yeah. I thought you were going to say Hiddles.
Hiddles!
Hiddles?
I must not have been listening.
Is that Tom Hiddleston's line of diapers?
That's his. No, that's his internet pet name.
Oh, Christ!
I hear this a lot.
I'm sure you do.
I knew he was popular, but he's keeping the entire internet as a pet. That just seems wrong.
Pretty much.
Seems like Loki.
Well, it's a timeshare with Benedict Cumberbatch, you see. So,
well, and that's only until Viggo Mortensen gets back.
When the new season
what is he
of
up to?
Sherlock premieres, then
he's inventing a language and painting and writing poetry about painting and buying more horses and basically just fucking things up for the rest of us. That's what Viggo's doing. I think Viggo is fantastic. Fucking Viggo. Fucking Viggo and fucking Bone Claws. Those are the two things I hate most in life.
Fuck all of y'all.
Yeah, thank you, Robo Scott. Oh, God.
Wouldn't it be helpful if these people just knew who we were?
I would recommend that everybody go see
We've been here for 5 hours. You want to do introductions now?
No, it's too late. Robo Aaron, where were you an hour ago?
What the fuck are you talking about?
Exactly.
Ending the show. Ending the show.
Now it's time to Soft end the show. Sexy. Actually, you know, just like Blockbuster, we should go out with This Is the End.
No, we should go out with horrible movie recommendations. Give me just a minute while I clarify.
Your Weekend Justice, episode number 205, Gwyneth Paltrow, was a production of NeedCoffee.com. The show is engineered and produced by John Boutel. The league roster for this podcast was in order of how far they can throw an angry wombat, John Boutelle, J.J. Hawkins, Tuffley, Kim, Serve, Lee, and Rob Levy. This episode was directed by Alan Smithy from a script by Din Drain and Doc Ezra, with additional material by Beth Imhoff and Kelly Cantor. All editing snafus were from me, Widget Walls. Special thanks to everyone who sponsors the site and thus makes shows like this possible. If every listener we had to this show just donated 99 cents a week, the entire server and our bandwidth would be more than paid for, with enough left over to provide bus fare to needy anarchists in Montana. If you've already set up your easy recurring micropayment at needcoffee.com/support, then pat yourself on the back, but not too much, because you'll go blind. If you haven't given, it's never too late. Go to needcoffee.com/support and throw some coins in the virtual tin. Thanks in advance, and now, here's Dakota.
I actually need to see- eating a donut. I don't care.
Oh, Aaron's even funny canned.
Does he have a pop top, or do you have to actually get a can opener?
No, he comes with his own key, like a tin of sardines.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, he has that new thing where you have to open, crack the smaller hole to get the. Yeah.
Whoa! Oh! Oh! My God!